I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin.
And we're a gay.
And his NB.
Episode number 91. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of A Gay and His NB, the podcast where we talk all things that we're watching on television this week. We have a very fun episode that we're going to get into in a short period of time. But before we do any of that, as we always do, we have a few housekeeping notes that we have to get out of the way first.
Wherever it is you're listening to us, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the other lovely places out there where you can get all your podcast lovely things into your ear holes, if you could just go and leave a rating and a review for us, that would be fabulous. Not only does it get us into the algorithm, help us find other wonderful listeners like yourself out there in the world, it also helps us get some feedback from you, lets us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what you would like to see from us in the future.
You can also follow us on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, all at A Gay and His NB, where we're posting new content every day, including clips from the podcast and some of our initial thoughts about things that we're watching. If you want instant opinions from our live tweeting, that's where you can get that. And if you just want an extra dose of A Gay and His NB, that's where you can find it, all at A Gay and His NB.
Speaking of an extra dose of A Gay and His NB, you should have some in your personal life every day, you know, surrounding you in your home that you wear on your body. And you know where you can get that. You can get that over at agayandhisnb.threadless.com. That's right. We have a merch store. We have lovely designs on there made by myself. I do say lovely because I made them myself. And, you know, you can get that on just about anything you can think of. There's like mugs. There's travel mugs and regular home mugs, like the little ceramic mugs. You can get blankets and t-shirts and stickers, magnets to put on your little refrigerator right there. You know, lots of different ways that you can support A Gay and His NB there and have a little bit of us in your home with you. Like I said, that's agayandhisnb.threadless.com.
And if you have any questions for us that you would like us to answer on a future episode of the podcast, be sure to submit that to us on the social media platforms that I mentioned before or at agayandhisnb@gmail.com. Just leave your name, leave your question, let us know what you want us to answer, and who knows, we may answer it on a future episode of the podcast. Babe, what are we talking about on this 91st episode of A Gay and His NB?
We are going to be talking about Traitors. It's the penultimate episode this week.
We kind of like jumped the gun a little bit last week.
Jumped the gun a little bit because we knew Traitors, the reunion was coming out this week. So we kind of figured that last week was, no, we got the finale and the reunion coming out this week. So that's going to be a lot of fun to review next week. But this week, we're talking the penultimate episode. We're digging for gold and trying to traverse a river and all sorts of fun things happening over there. We're also going to be talking about Married to Medicine. We've got that first part of the reunion. Quad is back again.
for now.
For better, for worse, you know.
Yeah.
We shall see. But before we get into any of that, let's talk Drag Race.
Drag Race for this week, controversial episode. I mean, this is the first episode this season. Maybe I can't think of one last season either where it was like highly discussed in this. Not discussed, but like,
yeah.
I mean, in terms of the ending, like in terms of the result of things, I know people have very strong opinions.
Oh, I have written a dissertation and I will be reciting it later in the show.
Oh, great. But yeah, so this was a very fascinating episode. I would say a pretty riveting episode of television, I would say. We start the episode with the queens returning to the workroom after Tsunami's elimination, and Morphine and Plane are both kind of taking it really hard. With Tsunami going home, they sort of built a bond in that regard. And it was nice to see Plane have feelings, I guess, for once, like in terms of like,
what are feelings?
Like the one person, I guess, she wanted to go home. I don't know, but
whatever.
Everyone else, I mean, maybe you should use your potion then if that was the case, you know.
Yeah, that's why you have the immunity potion, you know.
At least for one more week. After the point of this episode. So they're discussing things. They congratulate Plane. Maya straight up says that she thought that, I don't think she says it in the work, I think she says in her confessional that Safira should have won Snatch Game, which I think we were both in agreement on that.
And most people online were too.
Yeah, so it's good to know that we're not crazy. and again, it's the continued trend of Maya being a little more opinionated, which I like. Like, I love that it's continuing from last week. Oh my God. And then they're all de-dragging and like, you know, getting done with a day or whatever. The fact that Dawn went up to Nymphia and goes like, no tea, no shade. I'm gooped and gagged that you weren't in the bottom. Dawn. Like, I...
Also, let's use all the drag terminology in one sentence.
Sure.
I gooped and gagged, bewildered.
That is kind of Dawn's personality. Yeah. She does, like, everything is just like a, like a, you know.
Everything's a soundbite.
Soundbite. But, yeah, it's just like, I defended her Meghan McCain a good bit last week, but, like, you were also very lucky that you were not
in the bottom for
that. At least from what they showed on the television screen.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They come back into the workroom the next day. Oh, my God. So they do a mini challenge. Rue comes in to do the mini challenge where they have them do spit takes.
Oh,
this,
yeah.
This is like... Yeah, I was... I agreed with some. I forgot who it was. Maybe it was Trixie on the pit stop, where it was like, found it a little unsanitary in the world. In the world in which we still have, like we're still living in COVID, like in many ways. Like,
yeah,
just the like the amount of like debris that was probably in the air.
We're aerosolizing liquid, which we know can carry COVID. Why?
Maybe have did that like 4 years ago, not this challenge.
No.
I mean, it was fun enough. Or at least get like some, like, I don't think they even had like
a plexiglass wall or something.
Something. Like the pit crew were like taking it, like, I think they had umbrellas or whatever, but that was about it. Like,
yeah.
Like, come on. Like, a little bit of safety protocol. But Nymphia ends up winning. It's a fun enough challenge. I don't remember much from it.
I don't either. I mean, I will say it's much better because they've done the spit take challenge before. And I think it was like season 6 because I seem to remember Roxy Andrews doing really poorly at it.
Mm.
But everybody...
It was season 5, but and it was Roxy Andrews, but they did it in...
why did I think that was 6? Yeah, 5.
Remember when they used to do the music videos for, like, the final challenge? They did a, like, courtroom scene, remember?
And then, right!
And then they made them do spit takes.
Oh, that was a weird music video. What song was that? I seem to remember Giant Rue.
I can't remember. I just remember...
I remember the convertible. Was that
yes,
season?
Yes, and they were in, like, an acid trip. With, yes. Like, it was...
Wild. But yeah, if I remember correctly, Roxy Andrews would just like open mouth and empty. Like, that's not a spit take, ma'am. That's not. No, but these were at least spit takes. All of these actually looked like spit takes.
Yeah, it was pretty good. But Nymphia ends up winning. It was weird because it's like you can't. I don't know what you can do with like to make like it's not really you can make a joke necessarily. It's
no.
More just how big you can
how
big you can spit. Which I mean that is a talent.
None of these girls spit on the regular, so
no. So Rue introduced the maxi challenge for this week, and it's another design challenge. Crazy that they've had like I don't think since season 3 we've had 3. Design challenges on a
someone season. Mentioned that probably the reason they did this is because of the writer's strike.
I saw that too, which makes a lot of sense. But also, like, was the SNL skit thing like scripted by like
may have had that one already done,
right?
And because it's SNL and because it's Drag Race, they are not like super stickler on like. Because, you know, if you're doing a scripted show, if you have the script, but if someone ad-libs, then someone has to literally take that and write it down in the official script. So, like, there's still writers that have to be there on set. Whereas when it's a live challenge like SNL, you can have this pre-scripted and the writer doesn't have to work. They don't have to be there because it's a one take, well, quote unquote one take, because we know how that works on Drag Race. But you know what I mean?
For some reason, I was always under the impression that Drag Race had different, like they weren't under that umbrella that was like affected by like the writer's strike, but maybe I'm wrong. Because for some reason, I always thought reality TV was separate to that. But I guess in this case where you're writing sketches or you're writing, you know, things like that. I mean, I think that theory that you said is valid because we're seeing multiple design challenges and that like multiple like musical, not right. musical, but like dance, like song
which
challenges.
Are different writers than what is covered under the writer's strike.
Yeah, that's kind of
because they're musicians.
I feel like I also heard some rumor that we're not getting a live finale because of the writer's strike. Like that the, at the time that they were filming, they didn't know what was going to happen with all of that. So,
but I mean, that doesn't make sense to me because I feel like, sure, you could plan for a non-live finale,
mm-hmm.
but you should probably also just be available to do a live finale.
Right.
Like, I would think you have the plan for a non-live in your back pocket in case you need it. But if you don't need it, do the live finale.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, I just, we know from COVID that the viewers hate that shit. Give us your live finale.
Yeah. So the design challenge this week is for them to create neo-goth looks from scratch. I can't remember if they showed the, like, actual materials in regards to the... I don't remember seeing, like...
I don't remember a scurry for the materials.
Yeah, unless I'm just completely misremembering. Anyone who watched correct me. But, like, I don't remember that. And
I don't either. And
because I had questions later in terms of some of the materials that they were using.
Well, and I was also very frustrated that no one went with, look, jewel tones are part of goth. Like scarlet red, like like emerald green. Those are part of goth culture.
It doesn't have to be simply black.
Right. And there's plenty of ways that you could incorporate that and give a look that stands out from everyone else's if they had had access to colorful fabric.
Sure.
And they didn't. Like, it doesn't need to be, it can't be a bright fabric, right? Bright is completely not in the vein of goth, but like a dark, deep blood red.
Yeah.
Abso-fucking-lutely, that's goth.
Which is so weird. They didn't have any reds, but like deep, like burgundy reds, but like plenty of just like bright white, which I
guess, yeah, that was
black and white. I think we'll get to it, even though I like some of the looks that contained it. Like black and white, I don't really.
Why did they give them houndstooth?
That was what I was about to say.
That's not fucking goth.
Once when we get to plasma later, like what part of houndstooth is goth? But it's like they gave them the material. Well, so
and that was frustrating with Q's look too, because what about polka dot is goth? Like, I get the damask, like the stuff that she had on the lining on the inside that had like the black filigree with the white background. That's definitely can be worked into goth. I get that. That makes sense. White lace makes sense. You know, but like that polka dot fabric that she had on the top, absolutely not. No, ma'am. That is not goth.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of people struggling early on in terms of like understanding, like because Sophia's like, I have no freaking idea what goth is. Like, that's not my style.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, like, plasma is another one we'll get to where it's just like has no focal point of that reference.
I disagree in the umbrella of goth. I don't think it fits the new goth eleganza. There's no elegant to it, right?
Are you talking about
there's no
final
high
look?
Fashion look, right?
Okay.
It still, I think, fits under the umbrella of goth because I think things like emo and scene and things like that are like tangential to goth.
Well, that's the thing. I think we talked either last week or the week before we had talked about sort of like the theater kid experience of
right.
like sort of, and especially when you're in like high school and stuff like that. I can't imagine that like she had no experience at least interacting with like
right.
Because when you're in like we talked about it, like when you're in theater, like that's I gravitated towards that at like the lunch table in many regards. I wasn't specifically theater, but I was like choir adjacent. So
right.
like, that's where like I always had people within that circle.
All the outcasts were in the same circle.
Yeah. So it's like I'm sure you could pull some reference in terms of that, you know. Yeah.
And I will argue that she did deliver a mid to late 2000s, early 2010s, Hot Topic emo mall goth look. I don't think it fits the new goth or elegant or high fashion moniker, but I think it's adjacent enough that I didn't think it deserved quite the critique it got.
I would say 70% of that look was that you're describing. My problem is there's also a 30% in it that threw everything off to where you couldn't make it simply about that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like there were a couple elements.
The chokers were needed to go.
Yeah. No. It was really bad. Nymphia is still trying to do this whole, I don't know how to, like, I can't think of an inspiration. I can't, like, you know, you can't concentrate. And they're playing up the idea that she's struggling because she can't use yellow fabric because obviously you want to go banana. I was glad that she, keep her out of that box for a little bit because what she turned out was actually really good.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I.
But also like, girl. Design it in yellow in your brain and then make it in black.
Sure.
It's not that fucking hard. It's a color. You can swap it out.
Yeah. this is also, I guess, we'll get into it also when we get to the runway.
I'm just glad she didn't give us a rotten banana.
There we go. Well, wouldn't that be kind of...
I'm glad that she didn't, though.
Yeah.
Because I didn't need more banana.
What's the most gothic fruit out there?
Me.
Oh god.
Well, anyone who's been on Dracula.
Sure. I would think like maybe like a pomegranate. I don't know. It's like
maybe pomegranate. Maybe grapes just because wine.
Sure. Sure, why not?
Sure. Something in that vein.
Could have brainstormed something.
Vein. That's gothic. Blood. Anyway.
Wow. Okay. So I was going to mention, we won't go too... So Maya is struggling because she's not a sewer, obviously. Mm. But it starts out simple enough where she's like borrowing a dress from Saphira that she can use for the cutout, right?
Right.
Which I don't... That element
that,
of it...
That is fine.
We'll talk about like what should be considered like inbounds on Drag Race because there's a big conversation in terms of that. But like that I don't mind as much. To me, that's being intuitive with the tools.
Right. Like she saw, hey, look, I don't know how to make this, but I know it, I want it to kind of look like that. So that's already in the shape I want. Let's do it like that. Like that to me, like... You're thinking about what it takes to make a garment. Okay, that part I'm fine with.
Yeah. But it gets a little further to where it becomes questionable. So Plasma's working on her. She said, like, she's sticking to sort of the typical Plasma style and still. She's basically doing Plasma, but making it black, necessarily.
Yeah.
And, like, she mentioned something about, like, Scarlett O'Hara as a reference. Dawn not knowing who Scarlett O'Hara is, like... This is the thing. We talk about gays and like the modern white gays nowadays, and it's not just white gays, I guess, but like
it's mostly white gays.
It's mostly white gays where it's just like you can't tell me you don't have any culture in terms of like the fact that no one also knew who Patti LuPone was last week for Snatch Game.
Wild.
We didn't even talk about that, but it's there's no excuse, really.
Yeah.
Patti LuPone is like someone that at the very least has become memeable after the fact, so you at least know her from internet culture, I would assume.
I would think so. Like, I don't know. Like, it's Patti fucking LuPone. Like, how do you not...
This is why we need to teach gay culture in schools.
Yes.
Dawn, because Dawn had already said the past week about like Plasma sort of like falling into her shtick or whatever. So she's kind of advising Plasma against this. She's like, are you trying to diversify like what you make? I think now would be a good time to diversify. Let's talk about it now. Do you think Dawn sabotaged Plasma?
No.
Really?
No.
I'm unsure. Here's the thing. I don't think in this early part.
I think if she had, we would have gotten an indication of that in the confessional, and I don't believe that we did.
Do you know what I actually got an indication from the confessional, and you know what it was?
I don't think it was big enough to be considered an indication in the confessional.
But you know what I'm talking about? Before they fucking go out when they're doing the makeup, Dawn gives a confessional where it's like, I'm really proud of Plasma, and I actually think her looks really cute and chic. And then when it walked out on that runway, I was like, Dawn, you a liar. You a liar face. Or you're trying to get us to believe that you don't understand what chic is.
I mean, I feel like she liked what she was doing, but maybe didn't understand how it would look on the runway.
Sure, she maybe didn't style it yet.
I feel like she was because they do those confessionals. When do they do those confessionals?
I think
they
like
do
the
them
day
first.
After.
They do them first thing in the morning the next day.
Right.
So she had already seen her go home at that point.
Right.
But I think at that, I think she also was like, okay, I when I'm thinking about this and when I told her that, I saw it on a mannequin. I saw it in pieces. I saw this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I think maybe it's from that frame of mind. I feel like Dawn is shady enough that if she was trying to sabotage Plasma, she would have been a lot more overt in that confessional.
That's possible. I will say there was a lot. Did you see the tweet that was like Plain Jane and Dawn? And it was like the TV show villain versus the real villain. I love that narrative in terms of like we were all focused on Plain Jane, but like Dawn is underrated.
I don't think she's a villain. I think she's a shady bitch, but I think she's shady in the right ways.
Sure.
She's sneaky shady. She's not a dick about it.
No, she isn't. Plasma though was saying also in the workroom when she was like redoing her look or whatever that she was going like goth Bratz doll. I get
that
in the final look.
Yeah.
Kind of. I don't think when I think Bratz doll, I don't think like pants and like, you know.
I mean, but if you were going to put a Bratz doll in pants, it would be one that is flared at the bottom, like her pants were. Right. It would be like,
if she was going to do Bratz doll, I think maybe what it is for me is like also if she was going to do Bratz doll, I think she should have gotten morphine to like help with her makeup or whatever because it didn't.
Sure. It needed like the big graphic eye.
Right.
You know, if you're going to do Bratz doll, it should. And like the over exaggerated lip, like you need like a fashion mole put on. Like there's things, right? There's zhuzhing that needed to happen.
Yeah.
But I can see that in what she did. I think she also needs like a black little hair clip.
Oh, yeah.
A little butterfly hair clip that's you know what I mean?
Something a little, not gaudy, but like
something that's tweenager.
Yeah.
Because that's Bratz doll is like a 12-year-old, right?
Yeah.
Which if you look at her look, I mean, it's a 12-year-old that likes, that wants to be a goth person, but doesn't know how to do it yet. And like, but that's the thing. Again, it's going to the mall. It doesn't rise to the level of Eleganza, which I think was part of the assignment. If I remember correctly, it was supposed to be high fashion. Like they specifically reference like Mugler and things like that in the description of the challenge. So it's like, girl, you knew this wasn't going to cut it. But I still don't think it was as bad as everybody's acting like it was.
We'll get to it. Q is telling Plain. Oh, because Plasma's like doing like this like jacket with all these like shredded sort of things or whatever. And Plain's doing like a similar thing with like shreds or whatever. Q tells Plain this and Plain going up to Plasma Station to basically be like, hey, so Q's telling me you're doing a similar thing to me, sister, or because she can't. And then Plasma being like, can I see it? And she's like, no. And Plain's like, or Plasma's like, well, get the fuck out of my station then. I love that she says her confessional, gaslight gatekeep girl boss, get the fuck out of my station.
Accurate.
And that was fun enough. So back to Maya. Maya is still struggling. Safira is pretty actively helping her, similar to last design challenge. I do have issue when she's like cutting materials. That's my more problem. I don't even mind the part where Safira is like, okay, you're going to like making markings, even to say you're going to cut here, here, and here. And like, it just kind of transitions to where she ends up doing it. So
yeah. Well, and that's my main issue. Can I give part of my rant now?
Yeah, go ahead. I know you've been waiting.
I literally have it pulled up on my phone. I've been patiently sitting over here waiting to read it off. So my issue here, okay, so let me start with Plasma's look. Okay. So it's still definitely in the bottom. Absolutely no argument will you get from me whether that deserves to be in the bottom or not.
Sure.
I don't think it was a mess like everyone was saying it was. I think there was a thought process. Like it gave a look, like I understood what she was doing. It wasn't messy. It was actually, if you look at fashion from about 10 or 15 years ago, it will look like that. like the shreddy arm, like,
yes, I think
things. I think there's specific references, and then she just made it goth. She made it black and white. She made it fit into the color palette. I think that it, again, doesn't read goth, right?
Sure. I just think there's too many references.
Again, the necklace thing needed to go. The judges called it 70s, which the only thing that you could
is
the Cher hair. And that's not even Cher hair. Other people had long, straight hair before Cher.
Sure.
Get over it. Other people are going to have long, straight hair since Cher. That doesn't make it fucking Cher hair.
Yeah.
Stop it. It doesn't make it 70s.
It really is only Rue and Michelle's only reference
point. It really is. And it's getting exhausting after 16 years.
Yeah.
So it's not 70s. Stop it. So that's Plasma. That's my rant about Plasma.
To Maya.
Like you were talking about. Maya didn't do this goddamn challenge. Safira did.
Sure. Well, so when she was on the runway, she was... What was she saying that she did? I forgot. There was...
She said she put it together. Like, she sewed it.
She sewed all of it.
That's it.
But it... Yeah.
So it's... I'm just going to read what I wrote down. It's one thing to get help with a look, but when the entire challenge... Or when the look is the entire challenge, and another queen basically does the whole thing, that's a problem.
Sure.
A major problem. We wouldn't let another queen step in for someone in an acting challenge, and it still counts. So why are we allowing it here? Like, not once, well, but twice. This is the second challenge that this has happened.
Some people would dispute that argument. Only in the sense that, like, I saw the example used. I don't think it's the exact correct example, but I've seen the example used.
I've got a rebuttal.
That, are you talking about the Nymphia thing?
Uh-huh.
That someone, that basically during the girl group challenge, someone, one of the other girl group members wrote Nymphia's verse.
It was Maya.
Right.
So it's not the same thing because it's a group challenge.
Sure.
And you can argue that before the girl group challenge has been judged individually, but it hasn't happened that way in like the last 5 seasons. So the assumption is the girl group challenge is going to be a group judging.
Right.
And Nymphia still had to record her verse. She still had to learn choreography and do the choreography live and lip sync to the song. Right. So there was still a major part of that challenge that she had to do and do on her own. Plus she had to put a look together for the runway and a look together for the performance itself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like Nymphia did nothing. Maya did basically nothing in this challenge. And she did more the last time there was a design challenge, but she still didn't do much. So it's getting frustrating when someone continues to get by on only their lip sync ability and not their ability to actually do the challenges. The only time she has alone done enough to not be in the bottom has been during Snatch Game.
I would argue the girl group challenge. I mean, she won the one that she won.
Her group did, but that was a group challenge. That was not an individual challenge.
Fine.
It's a different level of a win.
Yeah, I think, like, I understand the natural frustration about, like, the lip sync carrying someone over. I understand that. I also think that it's a merit of, like, yeah, once you get into the bottom, the lip sync is the determining factor.
When Amanda went home.
I disagree.
Q was kept.
Okay.
Q was kept because Q has a better track record and has better potential for the rest of the show.
But I was seeing a lot of those tweets online as well, and I'm sorry, we'll get to it. Amanda's performance in that lip sync is not the equivalent to Maya's performance in this lip sync.
It's not, but Amanda still won the lip sync, and she had not been into the bottom for 3 times without progress. Maya has been in the bottom for 3 times and has not progressed as a queen.
Sure. And don't get me wrong. They structure it a certain way to where, I mean, I think it was difficult in the sense that, like, I think we'll get to it. I think there was a very clear bottom two.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. And by that argument too, does it really matter? Like, to me, I also don't even understand the argument in terms of Safira's help in this challenge when Maya's in the bottom two anyways. You know what I mean?
Sure, but Maya was in the bottom two without having to do anything.
I guess. She didn't have to whittle her fingers.
At least if she had earned her way into the bottom two, I wouldn't be so upset with her staying over Plasma. Now, I also don't believe that she should have necessarily gone home. I believe it should have been a double Shantae.
Yeah.
Because I think Plasma turned it out in that lip sync. I don't think she did as well as Maya, but I think that there are some faux pas that Maya has been committing in her lip syncs that...
I think it would have been a generous move for them to give them that, but I think it's the, like, yeah, I think...
But let's talk about why Plasma went home. She already had two wins, and she very likely would have won this week, and they did not plan on her being in the top four.
Exactly.
And we all know Drag Race has been exposed for having their top four pre-planned when they cast the season, and they will do anything they possibly fucking can to make sure that that top four stays intact.
Sure.
And that is the reason Plasma went home.
Like I said, but I agree with you completely. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, I do think it... I think that plays into account why there wasn't a double.
Right.
I think, like I said, it was pretty obvious who was going to be the bottom two by the end. Like, when they tried to indulge a third person, I was like, why are we even doing this? Like,
yeah. No. It's so obvious. Like I said, I agree. Those are the bottom two. 1,000%. But I think that between Plasma turning it out and between... Now, the week before, Maya took her shoes off in a lip sync. That is an absolutely not okay thing to do.
We're getting a little too far ahead.
Yeah, we'll talk about that during the lip sync.
Yeah, so let's head to the runway now for the actual challenge. The guest judge for this week is Kaia Gerber, who I thought was... I know nothing about her because I'm, like, again...
Yeah.
Just turned 30.
I don't know who she is either.
Not an excuse, but I thought she was fabulous in the judging.
Yeah, I thought she was great.
That she was just like, Michelle, you've literally never walked a runway, basically. I like those moments.
I was really surprised that they didn't use this week as a way to advertise the fact that Michelle Visage is... literally right now on the West End in London playing Morticia in the Addams Family.
And I didn't know that until you told me.
It's been all over her social media.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe this was how far, I don't know how far it was built ahead, but you could have done something in post. I don't know.
Sort of like something or like run an ad during the show. MTV can do that. It's fine.
Yeah. The category is See You Next Wednesday. First up, we had Plain Jane. I like this look from Plain Jane a lot. I was so annoyed with Michelle saying that. It's like, it was good, just not to your caliber. And in the back of my head, I was like, this is the best I think Plain's looked.
I don't agree. I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was...
I'm not saying it was stunning. I'm just saying for, like, this, I got more... I was like, oh, yes, I see your perspective.
I preferred her gas mask look to this one. Because really? It's in a similar vein, you know? As far as look, take the category away and put the looks next to each other. They're basically the same. So, like, I like the gas mask better than this, and I didn't really like the gas mask. So,
I guess this game more like Hellraiser vibes, which I liked. I love the studded elements. I like that sort of, like, it seemed more...
It's still a kink look, basically.
I guess, yeah. But I thought it was pretty well done. I also just love anything that has movement like that and, you know, they can mess around with a lot. Maya Manley-Page was next. I don't think this is bad. I don't think it's bad. I like the lace element. I thought it took something that was just like a simple mermaid, like latex dress, which it's like so simple and whatever, where it's like when she turned around and had that side profile, I was like, oh, that's actually really cool.
I wish, the only thing that I wish is that she had done cleavage.
Right,
she had done a V.
They make a comment that she always does like the cuts, like right up to like her neck or whatever.
And she ain't got much of a neck, honey.
No, and she's so short.
Yeah,
to where it's like, yeah, I forgot who it was, but like it'll elongate you if you like,
yeah,
give a little bit about that. Dawn was fantastic. I am sad that this was also a really, really stellar top to where Dawn kind of got lost in the shadow, because I think in another challenge just could have won.
I think she should have been in the top. I didn't necessarily think Nymphia's should have been in the top.
Really?
Yeah. There were
controversial opinions.
I had problems with Nymphia's look. As far as Dawn's look, I really love the neckline, that like shoulder to shoulder, like drape neckline. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a very, it was very popular, I think, in the late 90s, like reference to, like, if you remember the wedding dress from Parent Trap.
Okay, yeah.
It's that same cut. Absolutely stunning. Looks great when you've got good clavicles like she does, like the collarbones. And it just looks, it looks so good.
Yeah, I do agree also with the, I think you had said it even before the judges said it, like having some kind of lining on the, because it's like the chandelier, like
it blended
dress
in
dress part, it blended a little bit so you can see the details of it as much.
Like, yeah,
even if she had some lining of some color,
like silver, or if there had been
again
like,
red,
a red would have been really great, like some jewels on it.
Yeah,
that was she, red or something.
Because she had like red lips, so I feel like it could have like carried over.
I feel like, you know, she could have maybe put some white on there, but Q used all of it.
and morphine.
Well, yeah, morphine didn't use any white.
Yeah, she, her whole face was white. It was,
oh, no, I meant on the fabric.
Oh, for the fabrics. Yeah.
No, Q used all the white fabric. Sure. And the little bit of white lace that was left was around
Plasma's neck.
Plasma's neck.
Yeah. Speaking of morphine, morphine was next. I thought this was great. I didn't think she should have been bottom three.
Absolutely not. This fits the... If you're talking about new goth,
yeah,
this is the most in that category out of anybody else on that runway.
Right.
This gives the elegance and the like grandeur of something that's like a Morticia Adams again, a you know, that sort of vibe.
Yeah.
But then it has the spikiness that I think they called it new kid or club kid. In the judging.
What? I missed that. This is not Club Kid at all.
But I can get why, like, those little spike things kind of...
I guess.
...in that direction. But it's like, there's so much elegance and, like, elevation to it that it's not that at all.
Yeah. I thought if, like, they really just don't like morphine.
No, they really don't.
Like, I really... In the same way that you're about, like, we're upset about, like, the final twos, like, the biasing in the... Mm-hmm. In the judging and all that stuff. I feel like they just are really underselling morphine.
Oh, yeah. Her looks have been fabulous.
Yeah. And I think, like, Plain should have been bottom three if you're going to put a three in there.
I agree.
Only because, like, like you said, this was a little more sort of new goth. And Plain's, I think, was more retro. And I don't mean that as a read, but, like, it was it has more of a reference to, like, I would say, like, the 90s than this does.
Yeah, I agree. I would have, yeah, my safe would have been Nymphia with morphine and, well, actually, no, my safe would have been Q. I don't think that fits.
See, that, yeah, we'll get into it.
It's not.
We kind of already litigated plasmas a lot.
Yep.
It's not. I. It just doesn't come together for me.
Right.
The choke. Oh my god! When Kaya Gerber pointed out the two belts were so stupid.
The two belts could have worked again. That was the. That's one of those late 2000s, early 2010s reference points.
Sure.
I think it would have worked better if the white belt was on the bottom.
Probably.
If the white belt was actually in the pant loops to give a visual break there, and then the black was on top of that to break between the pants and the bodysuit, then that would have been great. Well, yeah. It would have been better.
Yeah,
it wouldn't have been great. It would have been better.
Yeah. Safira's was next. I really love Safira's look. It was,
absolutely.
Like, I liked... I forgot. Oh, it was Raja on Fashion Photo Review didn't love the character she gave to, like, the runway walk, which I fully disagreed with. I actually really liked this character because I was telling you it was giving... Oh, my God. Why can't I remember his name? The zombie from Hocus Pocus. Why can't... Oh, my... Why am I so... Okay, I literally think I'm losing brain cells because the last couple of weeks I've been so bad with, like, remembering names on things.
I can't even remember the actor's name. It's like Dave Jones or Dave...
Davy Jones? No, that's Byron.
Yeah, no.
Billy!
Billy's the zombie's name. Yeah.
So, like, it was, like, there was something about the presentation. Like, I think Rue made the comment of, like, she just got of a shift at the Haunted Mansion. And I was like, it does feel like sort of like a Disney-esque, like, interpretation of goth, which is very niche.
But it's also very black. Like,
sure.
The affectation that she's doing.
I was like, it's mainly a white dress, but you meant
No, I meant it's very much in black culture.
Yeah.
It's that I am so fucking done with these people. like, get me home. Sure. Like, get out of my haunted mansion. Why are you still here? It is past 8 p.m. The party is done.
Yeah.
We are done. Go home.
Yeah. It was fun. And I like the little slit of the, the black fabric.
It was almost like a front bustle.
Kind of, but it was done in a, it made an interesting sort of like silhouette when it came to everything. Yeah, I really liked it. Nymphia's, the fact that you did not like this.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I said there were elements that I didn't enjoy.
You had an issue with the veil. You agree with Michelle.
I don't think that when you have a veil, if you remove the veil, you should still have a blocked face. The whole point of that, the veil, is to be the blocking. So if you had the other like feathers or whatever that was in front of her face, you didn't need the veil.
She does do it like a moment where she lifts it fully, but then there's moments. But even then,
it's
like,
just like sweeping it to the side and then letting it go back. It's like it didn't.
I like the drama of it.
I agree with that, but when if it was on a fashion runway, that would be one thing.
Yeah.
But we are here to judge both the look and makeup and all of those things. And when you are actively hiding part of what's being judged, even if that's not in order to like get away with it being bad, right?
Sure.
It's still like this air of, I don't need you looking at this. Like, you don't need to see this part of the presentation.
Yeah.
And I don't like that on Drag Race. To me, you need to have your face present and presented.
Yeah, I guess. It wasn't a big sticking point for me, but yeah. And then finally we had Q's, which I understand your point.
It's a baby doll.
It's a little bit, it verges a little more like horror inspired than goth, which is slightly different.
It is different. That was my exact sticking point. It was either like an Annabelle doll or like a clown or something. It was not goth.
It had some good goth elements that I like. I love the like ripped the fishnetty material underneath that really, so I thought that was one thing that really elevated the look.
This to me was more Club Kid than, you know what I mean?
It verged on Club Kid, and I think also Q's presentation of it.
Yeah.
Like in the same way we were talking about Safira's, like Q can't help but go slightly Club Kid when she walks the runway. If she went a little bit more darker in the presentation, I think it could have...
Possibly.
That could have gone to the back of people's minds more.
But it to me reads horror Club Kid, not goth.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fit the category.
I like the leather elements of it, like with the panty and like the boots and stuff like that.
I liked that.
Like, I think there's a lot really good to it. And it is a stunning look.
Oh, absolutely. It looks amazing. I just don't think it fits the category.
Sure. That's fair. They do the critique. Well, so Plain decides to not use her potion. So she only has one more week after this week to use it. So it's going to come down to the wire.
I don't want her to use it offensively, but I kind of want her to use it offensively.
I think she kind of has to. You know what I mean?
Unless she just bombs this week.
Right. Well, but either way, I mean, in theory, she's guaranteed final five.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I mean, or she could ruin the immunity for everybody else by just actively not trying, because she knows she doesn't have to.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, why not give up in terms of this challenge and then just be like, bam.
I'm just going to take a few days off, or I'm going to actively sabotage other people.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, but I'm immune.
Why not?
So I won't win. Okay.
I've already won twice, so it's fine. Like I said, Plain decides to not use it. They're doing the critique. They critique everybody, which I appreciated. They definitely planted in Michelle's head the whole, like, Maya didn't make this whole thing herself. Because for her to ramble and be like, so I don't really understand. So, like, how did you make a whole... You said that you don't sew. So how did you make a whole dress like that with a mermaid bottom and you don't sew?
I don't know.
Unless she was fed information. Like,
if somebody was going to point it out, it would be Michelle.
I guess. But to me, like, why wouldn't the natural thing be like, oh, my God, you said you didn't sew. How did you do all that? Like, that would be how it would start. You know what I mean? It was all automatically. It was the meme of the.
I would agree if it was Carson who said something like that, or if it was Rue that said something like that. I will totally agree. But Shady Boots, Miss Visage over there, you know she's going to go into, this don't sound right.
Well, I was going to say, it sounded like that meme. You know that meme of the, like, something just didn't feel right. it was strange to me. But yeah, so Q ends up winning. You kind of disagree on that. I see it. I would have loved for it. I like Dawn's the most, but I also understood why Dawn didn't win.
I would have had Dawn, Morphine, and
probably Saphira.
Saphira in the top three. Okay. Would have been my top three.
Yeah.
And I probably would have given it to Dawn, maybe Saphira. Mm. Well, actually, all three of those were, as far as the category goes, pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
So, like, I could have seen any of those three winning. I don't understand why Q won.
Yeah. The bottom two are Maya and Plasma. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's get into the lip sync. Before we get into sort of the actual, the critique of it. So they lip sync to Bloody Mary, parentheses, the TikTok Wednesday Addams verse remix.
People were so angry about this.
Can I say, I don't understand it to me. Like, people were vehemently like, people were like, this is a game-changing shift in RuPaul's Drag Race that we are doing TikTok songs. I'm sad. And I'm like, yes, I wouldn't love it to be like a regular thing to do, like TikTok songs.
But this song went so fucking viral, and spoiler alert, nobody fucking knew what this song was before it went viral.
Well,
in my opinion, I had never fucking heard this song before.
I've heard it, but it's not the most like prominent Gaga track to me.
Right.
I will say this, like, I prefer this version of the song for a lip sync.
Yeah.
Because the original version's
it's more cunty.
And the original version's a little too slow.
Yeah.
For me.
Well, and it's so iconic now because of the meme, because they redubbed it from, because I know you didn't watch Wednesday.
I didn't get to, no.
But the scene that they pulled this from had a different weird kind of song to it. But it went viral with this song put over top of it. And it's just so good. And it was something that was a mainstay online for like months and months. Most memes don't last that long.
Yeah.
So I get why they played into this. And to the point where I actively was reminded of this version, went and sought out this version and put it on my playlist for regular rotation.
Sure. I like the song.
It's good.
Yeah. So to the lip sync, before we get into the the valid critiques, holy fucking shit, Maya Monlapage was amazing. I rewound this like three times. It was so good. Like multiple backflips all the way to the back of the stage in a fucking mermaid gown. Like, and
also in a gown that is latex.
Yeah.
That shit don't stretch.
Mm-hmm.
It don't move. It is what it is.
And also the duck walking was like, I saw a lot of like, also like, ballroom scene people being like, this is how you fucking duck walk on drag. Like this is how it should be. There's a skill to what Maya does that is so phenomenal and like just unmatched, I feel.
Yeah.
I think, okay, so then, but then let's get into it. I find it very convenient, I'll just say this, that you are now on my side about what I said, because I said it with Maya's lip sync with Megami about the taking of the shoes off, that I was like, glad she won, but what standard are we setting?
I agree, but I still stand by what I said at the time, in that that rule break fit, and rule breaks that fit,
sure,
are typically still allowed, right? The taking off your wig, as long as it's still to a fashion moment, right? As long as there's something created from it, then that's now become okay.
You could argue the petals.
No, you can't argue the petals because you couldn't see the damn things.
Yeah,
you couldn't see them until they were on the floor.
Yeah.
They were wasted. And then you revealed to a fucking beanie or a wig cap or something, and you bothered to point that shit out by including the Plain Jane confessional and the shady music over it.
Yeah.
And then you still didn't Like,
here's my question.
Hold her accountable.
Was it
for
a
it?
Wig cap or was it a beanie? Because
I don't fucking know.
I think there's a difference. I think if it's just a plain wig cap, then yes, I would agree with you. If it's a beanie, if it's a genuine beanie, I actually think that is a worthy enough move.
No, only because it looks shitty. It looks dumb.
I don't.
And then she took that off to just reveal regular cornrows.
Yeah, but it was like towards the end of the, like it was right at the end of the lip sync.
Like, girl, what are we doing? There's no, like, there's nothing. Like, if I were going to do that and reveal to something, it would have been to a platinum blonde pussycat wig, because yeah, that would have looked fucking amazing. And then you would have been able to see the black rose petals, or make them red rose petals, or white rose petals, something.
Yeah.
You can't do that. That was the absolute worst way to do that,
I guess,
in my opinion.
I think also, so with the plasma element of it, I see what you're saying in terms of like matching in a way. There was some notes about it being slightly sloppy in parts. I get that. I wish she would have leaned more. I think her mistake was trying to match Maya.
Oh, no, I think she did well in that.
See,
I really enjoyed her going, well, if you can do that, I can do that too.
See, I think she should have gone the Ben de la Creme route, where she is performatively being like, I can't do that shit. Like, you know, I remember when, yeah, Ben like did with like, I think Shangela or whatever, where it's just like, oh God, like I'm about to imitate this like poorly. Like that to me, I think would have been smarter than trying to go as equally matched as possible.
Is that the lip sync that she eliminated herself on?
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
Either way. But
my issue is that track record counts unless it doesn't.
Sure.
Being the third time in the bottom three counts until it doesn't.
Right.
You know, like, breaking never, the rules counts until it doesn't.
And they never expressly say these things, but we know that as, like, a fandom, right?
Yeah, like, there have been people in the past who have murdered a lip sync their third time in the bottom and have gone home.
And still go home, yeah.
They have won a lip sync and then gone home because it was their third time in the bottom without progressing. Maya has not progressed. She's, yeah, maybe in the workroom is coming out of her shell a little bit. But that's it. That's the, like, the only thing that I've really seen is that she was more activated during Snatch Game. That is the only evidence that the judges have seen that she has progressed.
Sure. I think there is a frustrating part, like, cinematically in terms of, like, you know, how far, we know Maya's not going to win the season. So therefore, like, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
like, I think, like, I understood it, but I didn't. I just don't think it can last this long. And they've got to give her like some ballad where she can't do flips in. Not to say that she's only flips. She's proven
right
otherwise. But like, I think she, like, you need to pick the right song to like really throw her off or something like that.
Well, and I feel like something like this completely shatters the illusion of fairness. Like, we all know it's produced. We know this. We've known this for a very long time.
I was like, I'm sorry, you thought there was an illusion of fairness on Drag Race?
But you can at least pretend, because mostly things are only shifted a little bit. They're not this egregious,
I guess. Yeah.
Usually things are going, oh, well, I can see why that person's in the bottom. I wouldn't put them there, but I get it. You know, it's usually that sort of thing. Or, oh, well, that lip sync was close. I guess you can kind of say they lost. Yeah. Whatever.
I lost that when they sent Sugar Cane home that one time when her team literally won the challenge.
Yeah, but they literally made it an individual. And I think that was the last time a group challenge was a singular win on regular Drag Race.
But even
Drag
if it
Race
was a singular win, every single person on the other team bombed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and they were like, you did good, but not well enough. Bottom, go home.
Well, what they did was they were like, well, there's one bottom from each team. And they did it so they could get rid of Sugar Cane.
It's so stupid. But
you know what I mean? It's egregious shit like that that really frustrates me and makes me want to, like, not watch shows like this. And that's not great, because this is one of the few shows that we have on television that is queer-centric, that is celebrating the art of drag.
Right.
And we have to preserve those. And the way you do that is by not playing in our fucking faces with this bullshit.
Yeah, I understand that.
Now, I say all of that to say there are a lot of you fucking fans out there that have never liked anybody who had a complexion darker than an 8 by 8.5 by 11.
That part.
So I need y'all to sit the fuck down and shut the fuck up, because Maya has been turning out these lip syncs.
Right. That cannot be denied.
The fact that she is a black woman has nothing to do with the reason why she should have quote unquote gone home. I don't even think she should have gone home. I just think Plasma shouldn't have either.
Yeah.
Like, Plasma's great. I certainly see her winning an All-Stars in the future.
Yeah.
I just didn't think it was fair that she went home right
and
now.
And credit to her, she took it fairly well, especially for a theater kid.
Yeah.
I would have fully expected her full of Rachel Berry.
Well, yeah, that's because she's a theater queen who has actually won challenges in the season.
Sure.
We haven't had that before.
She's had some validation.
She's had a little bit of validation. She got validation as Barbara and as Patti LuPone. So
so she's good. So it, like you said, suck
and to, Julie Andrews.
Yeah. Suck to see Plasma go home. Very sad, obviously. Yeah. I thought she could have made the final, but yeah. So we're down to 7. It's season's coming up close ahead, so you know it'll be interesting to see how things play out. So that was Drag Race. We're gonna take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're talking the newest episode of The Traitors. Don't go anywhere.
Well, hello, friends. I'm your pal in the mainstream media.
And I'm the Riz.
And, you know, Riz, it takes years of strenuous, dedicated training before you're worthy to step inside a professional wrestling ring. But it takes even more time to develop complex, highly astute opinions about professional wrestling. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes. And you know where we can find that?
Yes.
On the Wrestling Mayhem.
That's right.
Do you want something new to put on your reading list? Are you feeling your holiday spirit grow while also being astutely politically in tune?
Then you'll want to pick up The Santa Strike, a new book by Shanna Hamaker.
While home in Midland, Texas, on a weekend visit with the eccentric uncle who raised him, Marion Wachowski, otherwise known as Mary, discovers a long-forgotten letter Uncle Joe wrote to Santa Claus. Mary keeps it to share with his girlfriend Lindsay and his best friend Tommy. At first, they consider the letter to be nothing more than a silly lark. What kind of grown man would write a letter to Santa? But soon, Mary and Lindsay find themselves caught in a much larger mystery, concerning many, many more letters to Santa, all surrounding the crisis of gun violence in America.
You can order The Santa Strike now on Amazon, available both on Kindle and in paperback.
Sidekick Media Services. We are your sidekick in business for social media, video production, and more. Find out more at sidekickmediaservices.com.
Welcome back to A Gay and His MB. Let's head back to the Scottish Highlands, where despite ridding themselves of their biggest adversaries, our mistresses of murder still find themselves on shaky ground, threatening to dump them unceremoniously into the frigid waters of banishment on the Traitors.
You really channeled your John with that.
I really did. In true John fashion, you know, you pay tribute to the person who has just left.
Yeah.
Whoo, lo and behold, that motherfucker went home.
Yeah, and not the only one. So,
no.
Traitors for this week, I thought this episode was emotional as hell, even though it was hard to sort of like decipher what I felt at the end of this episode, because
yeah.
It definitely felt like we were just reaching an inevitable point towards the end that was like prolonged. Oh,
that round table at the end was just, it was a ritual killing. It was not a banishment. It was not a murder. There was no cruelness to it. It was just, and you're next.
Right. And it's so.
And Phaedra went, okay.
Basically. But it's like, and we talked about it where it's like, yeah, I think Dan just like, there was no, I don't see any way really that they could have fixed it. There were some choices I think Phaedra could have made. That, and we'll get into it, but it's like, I also don't even know if those choices would have changed the result.
Because Dan decided to go so overt with some of their murders.
Right.
That the Parvati and Phaedra were left cleaning up his mess, and they didn't have an option but to make the overt moves that they made after the fact because he had left such a mess behind him. So they didn't really, like, it was pretty much the second that Dan decided to turn his back on everybody.
Yeah.
And be all for Dan and nobody else. He wrote their fates. Like, they were screwed. They didn't have an option but to play the way that they did, in my view.
Right. So we come back and we're at the sort of cliffhanger that we had from last episode where MJ's the deciding vote. It's 4 versus 4. It's either going to be Phaedra or Peter, and they're building it up. And then MJ turns over her chalkboard.
And it says, Peter. She could not write that any smaller if she tried.
And she does it later. And like, she's been doing it all season where it's just like, I don't understand how people can write that tiny with chalk.
With chalk. And I believe she has nails too. Like, how are you doing that?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. So it's like, no, I can't. There's no other words because it's too small. There's no room. Like, you can't. I can't.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So she votes for Peter. Peter gets up, reveal. I mean, it was exciting. Only in the again, like what we were saying before about like the inevitable being prolonged. Even though Phaedra, spoiler alert, goes home at the end of this, like I was honestly happy they took Peter out.
Oh yeah.
Like in terms of like that we don't have to suffer through Peter like possibly winning this game.
Yeah. At this point I'm convinced that Sheree's gonna win this game and still not know what game she's playing.
Honestly, I can believe it. But so Peter gets up, reveals he's a faithful, obviously. John and the way that John and Trishel are just like fucking told y'all. It's like he literally gets so bloody obvious. Like it was almost just of like duh, like we knew, like, and I, here's the thing, whatever you could say about like Trishel, like she, as annoying she gets to be like these last couple episodes and this episode, she's correct. Like she when later they're just like, I just don't think the evidence against Phaedra was like tenable. Why? Like
it really wasn't.
I mean, do you think?
What actual evidence did she have for Phaedra?
Sure, but in comparison to Peter,
she was pointed that. What? No, I would say Peter was acting more traitor-like than Phaedra
was. Okay, but acting. But when Peter's literally laying the thing out about just like, why the hell would I kill Bergy? Why, like,
to throw scent off of him?
I mean, I guess you can explain like most things, but it was like
because it specifically targets the people he wants y'all to look at. The argument for Peter is these are the actions you're taking, and these are reasons that those actions can be interpreted as traitor behavior. The evidence for Phaedra is, well, you've been quiet, and this other person that we know is a traitor pointed us in your direction at one point, but he's a traitor, so we shouldn't trust him. But also, he's a traitor, so we should trust him.
I will say.
Also, you're a black woman. We've targeted those in the past on this show.
Sure.
So there's that.
And I still am not like 100% certain that's not part of Trishel's rationale.
I am. That is number one thing on her list in her notebook. It's just that she didn't bring out the notebook, so we can't see that.
She was just like, ooh, let me skip past that part.
Let's start at number two.
I swear we're going to see that notebook in Sheree's on it. And it's like, why?
Because honestly, though, Sheree is too quiet. When has she thrown somebody's name out there?
I guess. But like, no one.
If Trishel targets Sheree next,
right,
we know it's racism.
Well, the next target is going to seemingly be Sandra, if not.
Well, that's also a woman of color.
Sure.
Like, I just...
There's a pattern.
I'm just saying.
But I will say, Phaedra, there are, as much as like body language or whatever, when fucking Peter gets eliminated and John and Trishel are just like beside themselves being like, you should have listened. Phaedra just sipping out of her water glass. Those are the moments where I was like, wow, Phaedra. Like, you just like...
Phaedra should have turned up the I'm tired of being attacked.
I'm tired
of people coming after me. This is difficult on me emotionally.
There was an emotional argument that she could have made to maybe save herself. And
yeah.
Especially when we get to the round table at the end, she kind of still just is in the mode of just like deny accusations.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Well, I felt like she was trying to do that at that round table, but she didn't push it far enough because she was quote unquote tired.
Well, she didn't have a target either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that was the other thing. It was like, if it was not Phaedra, who? And yeah. So it was like, that's where I mean, it was like kind of inevitable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trishel is like, tells CT when they leave, thanks for having my back. And CT goes, now we know. Like, and so it's like, well, it's like now that, I mean, getting rid of Peter, at least we now figured out, like, no, it's definitely Phaedra. So
yeah.
Trishel's telling the ladies in the kitchen that she'll probably get murdered tonight, but that she thinks there's two left and that one of them is Phaedra. And Kate just has having to sit there and just be like, yep. Basically, like, you know.
Yeah.
We'll get to Kate later, and also some of, I think she kind of screws up her game too a little bit.
A little bit. I think she threw in too hard trying to save Phaedra.
Yeah. John tells MJ and CT in like the billiard room that he's probably getting murdered tonight, and MJ's like, MJ is so trying to just like be the light. MJ's the kind of person where it's just like, no matter the situation, just try to calm people down. She's like, I mean, I don't think we can predict what happens tonight. And CT just goes, whatever helps you justify it. Like,
oh, yeah.
CT, I felt, was like really pissed at MJ. It was
like really pointed. I'm like, wow, CT.
But still in a kind enough way where it's like, it's
was like, well,
it's like
if it makes you feel better to say that, then sure. But he's going to get murdered. He's going to be dead.
Yeah.
Dead, D-E-D, dead. Like, that is one of the things that really gets me about this, is that people get so offended and, like, they talk about the anxiety as if people are actually being murdered. And I'm like, y'all are fine. You're going home to the money you already have. You've already won on these other shows. You've already got all of these brand deals that all, like, stop it. Stop acting like this show matters other than exposure.
Yeah, that's fair. CT is convinced that it's one or two in the Girls Alliance that are traitors, basically. Which, again, pretty spot on.
Well, I mean, considering the fact that him and John are the only two men left on the show at that point.
Yeah. Soon to be
just him.
Yeah. It seems so. Phaedra is like, Sheree's just like, they keep coming for you, Phaedra. And Phaedra's like, I know. Like, what is that about? Like, she says her confessional, I was under fire, but you know, honey, only fire can turn coal into a diamond.
Pretty sure that's pressure. Actually, it's not fire.
I don't know if Phaedra fully. Like, I think I love Phaedra. Don't get me wrong. I think she did some great stuff this game. I think she has very good game playing elements to her. I think she had some good moments like round tables.
Yeah.
But I don't know if she fully understands how to play this game. Like, in terms of like knowing, like, she just knows how to be tough in a way and not like strategic in her toughness always.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kate lays it out later.
Yeah.
A little bit more selfish than strategic.
MJ, I was going to note that it seems also like, it really does seem like it's coming down to like where votes lie at this point.
Yeah.
To me, like Phaedra, the only hope Phaedra has at this point is that she has convinced enough people to bring her to the end to where it, when they get to the deciding point that they're not going to vote her out, right?
Yeah.
Like, because I mean, even like Cassandra seems pretty clear that she knows Phaedra. She's at least on to Phaedra at this point, right? But it's kind of still playing the idea of like, you know, what's the best move in terms of going to the end.
Well, and Sandra has made that point before of if we get out the only other person we know to be a traitor, we start over because there's still obviously a traitor here.
Right.
We're still here. Like, the game is still going on. So there's still a traitor. So, like, we can't act like we're going in blind now to the finale.
Right. Basically. They get to the... Kate and Phaedra get to the turret to discuss the kill. Kate's basically is like, we have to play a numbers game, I guess. So let's play a numbers game. And so it's down to basically John or Trishel. And, like, they end up killing John. I think that was probably smart in terms of John is a little more, like, there was a possibility for Trishel to get in her head, right, more than John.
But I think John, the argument for John is he's a good orator. Like, he knows how to do a speech. He knows how to change people's minds in just a few words.
Can I also say, though, when they, like, were down to it and it seemed like they were getting rid of John, I literally said to myself, and not to say that, like, and this isn't really a man thing, it's just actually the composition of the cast right now. I was like, they have no strength in these challenges anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, there's CT, somewhat Trishelle, because she's done some seasons of the challenge.
Yeah.
That's it. John, everyone else is kind of useless.
John would have broke a hip on these floating things in the river.
Sure. Like, she, like, I think he would
have. I'm just saying.
Yeah. We'll get to the challenge where I was just like, oh man, they really fucked up in terms of not keeping anyone who could deliver, because, like, you had, like, all pretty much the Bravo people, not the most athletic of bunch.
Hey, but they got most of the money in the challenge.
We'll get to that. I have questions about production when we get to that challenge and, like, what they actually achieved.
But who gives a shit? We all know finale they get the chance to win, quote unquote, the rest of the money.
That's the thing. The challenge doesn't really matter. I don't care, but, you know. We go to breakfast. Sandra and MJ are the first to arrive, and they're talking about how they're pretty sure each other are faithfuls, and so they seem to be on a good page. Sandra talks later just sort of like being friends with everyone and sort of having, you know, good relationships enough with everyone to sort of build that bond to get to the end. And then, oh my God. So there's a knock on the door, and then we get this trend of Sandra. So they knock on the door, and Sandra goes, "That's a dude knock. That's definitely CT." And then CT walks in. The way she was trying to just decipher, she's like, "That's a girl knock." Phaedra comes in. At one point, she's just, she said something's a John knock at one point. I was like, what does that mean? Like, is it British? Like,
it's got an accent.
It ends up being Sheree.
Well, we know it wasn't going to be John.
Right. They're discussing things before it comes down to Trishelle and Sean about John, about like where things stand. And Kate's also not in the kitchen as well. MJ is like, "What do you guys think about like Kate? Like, do you think, where does she stand?" Phaedra goes, "I think she's a faithful." And CT goes, "Do you think anyone's a traitor?" Because like, it does feel like, I actually think them, like you were implying earlier with like Kate's element of it, them defending each other so much is not the best idea when you have such an inevitable situation that could happen. Like, I would be incredibly impressed to see how Kate gets out of things next episode if she does.
Yeah, Phaedra. I feel like Phaedra at this point has given up, knew it was inevitable, and is just kind of here to be here at this point. You know?
Yeah, I can see that. Oh my God. So John gets killed. CT makes a comment after John gets killed about like, "I mean, I hope I'm as functional as I am, you know, he is at his age," or whatever. Phaedra goes, "How old is he?" And MJ goes, "I don't think he's old. I just think the people in England don't get Botox." And they just start cracking up laughing.
Well,
this is such a weird eclectic bunch where they're making sort of like the weirdest jokes like in the final hour.
Well, I think all of these people are, except for John, all of these people are Gen X, probably, right?
Probably.
I don't think anybody's old enough to be a boomer. Maybe.
Maybe Sheree?
Sheree might be. Sandra might be. No, I don't think Sandra's that old. I think everybody's Gen X.
She's as old as Larsa, remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, yeah.
But it's still Gen X, I think.
Yeah. It was just something at that moment where I was just like, this is a weird final seven to me.
Yeah. I couldn't have picked these seven out of the however many we started with. No. 20? 21?
Yeah, not at all. So they basically think there's two traitors left, and so that's sort of their position in terms of things. And they're kind of eyeing up what they're going to do. Sandra and Phaedra go outside to play giant chess, because I guess they have some giant chessboard in the yard. I was also so confused, because as they're doing this, MJ, Kate, and Sheree are having like a conversation. To me, like, pretty obviously in front. Like, they probably couldn't hear each other, but they definitely could see each other, that they were like conversing. These like two ends were conversing. You know what I mean?
I don't remember if it was Sandra or I think it was Phaedra. Did an interview, like an exit interview, where she said that they weren't even really playing chess because neither of them knew how to play chess. And Sandra only knew how to play checkers.
That's hilarious.
So they were just like moving the pieces around, and they didn't. And they knew that the other people were talking, so they were kind of trying to listen, but it wasn't working because they were too far away. So It was just this whole thing was just really funny. She also broke all of our hearts and said that there was absolutely no romantic connection between her and CT.
Oh, Paige said this?
Yeah.
Oh, well, so, I mean, I bought it at the end. We'll get to it. I believe love was real at the end.
Maybe she's just salty.
Yeah. MJ is saying, like, look, Sheree, like, you and I both know that we have to vote out Phaedra tonight, right? So basically, MJ's smart enough to be like, it's like Phaedra's the only one that like has definitive evidence against her. Kate is starting to suggest Sandra. She does it later where it's sort of this idea of like, okay, well, guys, she doesn't. Maybe this is more in my head what I thought Kate's mentality was than what she actually was doing. I think it would have been really smart to make the point of like, well, we've settled on the idea of there being two traitors, right? Like that's everyone's like reaffirming that idea. There's two left.
Right.
We know Phaedra, right? Let's start thinking about the second.
Right.
And there's no discussions happening in terms of that, right? Seemingly.
Right.
So like that to me, especially later, that to me, if Kate would have emphasized that more, I think it would lend more to her alibi in terms of why she was getting people off of Phaedra.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was a pretty obvious part of her argument.
Sure. Certain things I'm like, I need Kate to be more explicit.
Yeah. No, you know that's fair. Mean? But I also feel like in a game like this, you kind of don't want to be too explicit sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you kind of have to talk around things and like point people in a direction and go, do you see the thing? And they go, yeah, I see the thing. You're like, do you have the same thought I'm thinking about the thing that you see? Yeah, probably. Well, we'll find out when we write a name on the chalkboard. Sure. It's kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Trishelle and
you kind of have to do the same shit in Survivor. When you're putting votes together, you kind of have to talk around it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Trishelle and CT are talking in the room, and they're discussing, like, because the numbers are not on their side. And, like, CT's like, I think maybe MJ or Sandra could flip, like, in terms of that. Trishelle's like, I just don't know why people wouldn't listen to me two banishments ago. Like, how stupid. Like, we wouldn't be in this position, which is probably, again, true.
You aren't worth listening to, Trishelle.
Right. You know, you just kind of are annoying. And I think that's why people like later when MJ was basically being like, no, we consider you part of this. I'm like, no, you don't.
You don't like her. Stop it.
And then Trishelle just gets annoyed. She goes, I kind of want to go call the girls out right now. And she walks out to them in the yard and goes, hey, can I join this exclusive group? And they're like, sure.
My favorite part was CT peeking around the little column over there by the door.
She goes, are you guys ready to talk logic and reason or what? And Kate goes, are you okay? And Trishelle goes, no, I'm actually not okay. It's like, why? Like, and also, at that point, if Sandra and Phaedra hadn't spotted them before, Trishelle just coming out and loudly sort of like going at them, it's like, okay, like, God, like, really? Trishelle's like, I just feel like you guys have made up your mind in terms of everything. And MJ goes, look, there is no way in hell I'm going to let a traitor make off and steal everybody's money, which I kind of felt was like maybe foreshadowing, but I don't know. Also, like, they don't, I was trying to remember in terms of the finale last season. When they get to the part around the fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't, if they take someone out, they don't explicitly tell them that person is a traitor, right? I don't think, like,
I don't remember.
They don't tell them, like, you banished the Faithful or a traitor.
I'm trying to remember if Ari revealed he was a traitor.
I think he didn't reveal it, but I couldn't. I feel like they played it as if he chose not to reveal it.
I don't know. I can't remember. Yeah. I guess we'll see when we watch the next episode.
I only bring that up because I feel like that's going to be a major factor in terms of like, because to me, it's like once they get the other traitor, it's like, yeah, we're good. Like, you know, but like if you leave enough mystery in it, that to me is like, you know, makes it more interesting. Okay. So then they go to the mission. The mission is they have this giant pile of dirt that has all these gold nuggets inside of it. And also the shield is like mixed in there.
Mm-hmm.
They're all worth $150. They have to get the gold across this like platform bridge that they have to like hop across or whatever.
It's like floating in the water. Yeah. Right.
They have to put it on this weight until they reach like $30,000 or whatever. And then whoever finds the shield can put it in, like, if they get to the end, can put it in, like, a box, and then they've earned the shield and can't be murdered. It's really bad, this challenge. It's so, like, and it's not even, here's my crazy part. I didn't think it was that hard. Like, it didn't seem like the, like, they have had harder fucking challenges. Like, wasn't last season they were, like, jumping out of helicopters and, like, doing all this, like, wild-ass shit, and here it's just, like, balance across the fucking, like...
Yeah, but the difference is that anybody can push a thing or, like, jump out of a hell. Like, those are things that pretty much anybody can do. And also, not everybody jumped out of the helicopter. People volunteered for that.
Right, but it was a little... I don't know. It just felt a little more, like...
But, like, in this, it's like, you can either get across this platform or you can't. And it's not a group challenge. It's an individual... Like, individuals can get across this thing.
Right.
Either you can or you can't. I definitely couldn't get across that. There's no way I'd be able to get across that.
Maybe I'm overestimating myself.
I don't think you would be able to get across that.
Well, my frustration, too, was, like, they kept slowing. Like, they would jump on a platform, and then for seemingly, like, minutes, they wouldn't do anything. And it's, like, that was your issue, guys. You have to, like, they figured it out eventually. You kind of have to ride the momentum, because when you jump on one, it pushes you a little further.
Well,
part, to the other one.
Yes, but part of the issue is that the corner that you step on immediately sinks, and it starts wobbling.
Right.
And so you can't, if your footing's not sure. And so it's very hard to continue to fight past that part of your brain, because your brain immediately shuts down movement in order to regain balance.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to override that part of your brain.
But it's, yeah. But anyway, so it seems like, until, like, 5 minutes to go, they don't have nothing, right? So, like, yeah. It seems like they're just messing up the entire fucking time. Kate, like, grew up surfing, so, like, she's, like, really emphasizing that this could be good for her. And she's like, I have great balance. And they just show her fall, and she goes, I also have flat feet. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, CT and Shoshelle are basically carrying the entire load. At one point, towards the end, Sheree looks to Kate and goes, you going? And Kate goes, no, you go ahead. And they're literally like, no, this is pointless.
Yeah, Sheree and Kate and Phaedra are just sitting over there huddled together going, it's too fucking cold for this bullshit. Yeah. I'm not doing this.
They eventually get enough gold or whatever to get the weight down. And then MJ decides, like, with, like, seemingly, again, like, 30 seconds left.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to make one last attempt for it. And then she makes it with, again, it's like a second.
Yeah.
And she also takes so long to put the shield in the fucking, like,
yeah,
like, little thing or whatever, where I'm like, girl, you have like 30 seconds.
Yeah. She got over there. I think she got on the final platform with like 5 seconds left, and she started putting gold in the thing. I'm like, fuck the gold, put the shield in. Right. Like, what are you doing?
It's like, do what, like, that. That's where I feel like production is just like, just do whatever. Like, I don't, yeah, we're not gonna time it. Like,
this is not, we're here for shits and giggles, y'all. Like, we're just gonna have fun.
Yeah, they end up banking $28,350 into the pot, so somehow it's a success.
Somehow.
That's where I'm like, what is going on? They return to the castle. Sandra's like, I already know it's Phaedra. Like,
yeah,
you know, it seems like, again, the numbers are pretty much that way. But then Kate is talking to, I believe, CT and MJ outside about this whole theory of, like, who do you think the second person is, right?
Yeah.
And is, like, throwing out Sandra's name in terms of that. Sandra's talking to Trishelle in the kitchen. It's like, she's doing a lot of talking out there. Like, literally, like,
literally watching through the window.
She goes, I'm going to go out there. And then she comes up to Kate and goes, can I join? I thought this was such a bad move by Kate, because Kate then tries to continue the conversation of, like, yeah, we're just assessing, like, who the second traitor could be. Sandra's like, who are you thinking? And Kate's, like, silent for, like, what feels like minutes of just, like, not saying a name. And it's like,
well, I mean, she could have easily gone, well, we haven't settled on anybody yet. You know, we're thinking, you know, different things. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
You know, like, turn it around, have Sandra answer the question. Like, that's not that difficult.
Right.
Like, it, come on. Also, you could have easily gone, well, if we know Phaedra is, then what do y'all think about CT? He wasn't in that conversation. You could have thrown it on CT.
No, CT was. It was.
Was he?
Who wasn't in the I think, like, Sheree. But, like, you can maybe throw it on Sheree. I don't know. Like, go for a Hail Mary at this point. Like,
yeah. I mean, you could. No, I don't think that there's any way you can target Trishelle.
Sure.
I think she's just been on the right side of who the traitor is for too many times to get targeted.
Yeah, it would be difficult. I also just think, like, Kate going so into defend Phaedra, I think, was a mistake, because I do think this Kate being the one traitor this season who's, like, not playing selfishly in terms of, like, the other traitors.
Well, and the thing is that she came in when the kitchen was already on fire.
Right.
She came in and goes, what the fuck are y'all doing?
Like, I'll get some water bottles.
Right.
It's like, that's not going to help.
He's like, oh, wait, this is a grease fire. Fuck, that made it worse. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So then Sheree pulls Phaedra into the room to sort of, like, discuss things. The Sheree Phaedra, like, full circle-ness and their history, and Sheree basically having to be like, look me in the eyes, are you a traitor? And Phaedra having to lie to her. It was like, but I mean, Sheree, Phaedra's lied to you before. She lied about her due dates.
Yeah. Like, the first thing she did on Atlanta was lie about when she got pregnant. Come on now.
Right. But it also was crazy because Sheree goes, honestly, looking at you in your eyes, are you a traitor? And Phaedra goes, you said what? And Sheree goes, are you a traitor? She goes, no, I am not. I'm like, the you said what?
The pause was way too long.
It was crazy. It's like, Phaedra, come on. Like, in the words of Heavenly, we'll get to Mary the Medicine, honesty ain't in the bitch. It really isn't. Okay, so we get to the round table. Trishelle goes, can I start? And I was like, I guess. Like, why is... I also love that... I really thought they could have just literally been like, so we all agree Phaedra, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Spoiler, this is like the shortest roundtable discussion of all time.
And it's weirdly somber.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't start... Well, it doesn't necessarily start that way. Trishelle just goes into, like, evidence mode. Like it's any other roundtable to start. She goes, you know, we're here to find traitors. Every faithful so far has said that you guys are making a mistake. You know, you're going to regret, like, sending me out. Phaedra, I noticed that you were very silent when someone had your name up, and I just thought it was a red flag. And it's like, you don't have to, like, pull out another, like, thing of evidence. You know what I mean?
You don't. And honestly, that's not evidence. Considering the fact that you've been targeting her for so long, I wouldn't either. If I was a faithful, I'd be like, I'm...
Yeah.
Okay.
She's just like, that is the craziest argument in the world. Like, I've never heard of something so ludicrous. But she says it so, like, defeatedly. Like, she is a little defeated. And it's like, that's where I'm like, she's fighting still, but not enough. It would have been much smarter to do, like you said, to play towards emotions and be there, like, honestly, I'm fucking frustrated that, like, it feels like there's nothing I can do at this point because everyone's committed it in their mind. And so...
Yeah. And I...
Because Poverty kind of did that.
Yeah, but it didn't work for her either.
Sure, but it went, like, she had a chance, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think back if Phaedra has ever been able to make emotional arguments like that. And I feel like maybe that's just not in her wheelhouse.
I think maybe, like, brief moments with the candy stuff before it got really bad. Like,
but she didn't really. She kept... The second that she was found out with Candy, well, she kind of was defeated and just gave up.
What I mean is not when, like, the whole, like, allegation stuff.
With the freaking frack thing.
Like, the season before when they were kind of already splintering because of, like, the Todd stuff and all that stuff. Like, there were moments where, like, she definitely made more emotional arguments towards Candy. But I think she doesn't maybe have a lot of experience in that regard. I agree.
Yeah, she's very much more the kind of a lawyer that she is these are the facts. That's it.
Yeah. And deny.
Right. As opposed, like, there are other lawyers who are very good at making emotional arguments. I just don't think that's in her wheelhouse.
Right. But then, like, it's sudden, like, even, like, she seemingly has lost MJ at this point because MJ's like, I didn't think that you were a traitor, but because of your nature, you could handle it because you're a badass. Like, there's that, you know, you have the potential to be one.
There was definitely a lot of reverence almost in this round table. Reverence and respect, I think.
Sandra is, like, you know, you can't help but build friendships in this game. You know, it's going to kill me if you end up being a traitor, but like the signs are all there and we just have to see if what Trishel says is right and what everyone has been saying is right. It was kind of just like, for Sandra to just be like, I really love you. And it's also, she's not like needing Phaedra's vote, like in Survivor, you know what I mean? She's not like working her out the door. So it was like, there does seem to be a respect for Phaedra.
Yeah.
Trishel was like commenting on like social media saying similar things. I know we shit on her for like,
yeah, but she said it after the fact.
Yeah.
And nobody give a shit. She's seen how the racist allegations.
Yeah. Phaedra, after Sandra says the whole thing of like, we just have to figure this out, you know, if what Trishel is saying is true or not. Phaedra goes, look, it's a game. I haven't done anything for my name to be written down because when you look at it, you have absolutely nothing concrete against me. And I'm like,
they really don't, though.
They don't. They may not have, but at this point, they believe they do. So it's like you have to, like, you're not convincing them off of that fact. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, you, like this is the moment where it's like, play to their heartstrings. Don't play right. So analytical.
Well, and that's what I think was maybe her downfall, was that she played into, well, that doesn't make logical sense, but it made emotional sense.
Right.
So because you can't see the emotional argument, you didn't realize how big of a target was on your back.
Sure.
And you underplayed that threat, and that's what got you. That's what got you got.
Gotcha. Good. Sheree asks Phaedra, like, I don't want to believe you're a traitor, but if you have something else to say or give us. And Phaedra just goes, honestly, I'm very exhausted, and it just gets to a point where you just get really tired of fighting. Like, in a very, like, not in terms, like, I feel like not in terms of, like, I'm just sick of being accused of this, but it's very just, like, I've resounded to the fact that I'm going home.
Yeah.
And Kate is very annoyed by this. She is very upset. In her confessional, she goes, I've got a bat for you, Phaedra, and you aren't even trying. I'm not doing it anymore. It's like, well, you don't have to, and you shouldn't have done it in the first place. Sorry, Kate. Like,
yeah.
Kind of wised up to that. Alan immediately says that they're done talking. Like I said, it's very quick because everyone's just like has nothing else to say. They go to vote. Kate is so aggressively writing in her chalkboard. She literally is just like,
like, God fucking damn it. I tried to save your ass.
Well, and this is where I was. This is where Kate loses me, and I think maybe loses. She got a little too emotional. Sheree votes for Phaedra, and they build it up, and it's such a big. And even Phaedra's face is just like, yeah, I know. Like, you don't have to, like, feel bad about it. Kate reveals her vote. She goes, Phaedra, my vote's for you because there's not another person in this game that I can even stomach voting for. In this game, you're more selfish than skillful. It's not fun to play games with people who play that way. And Phaedra goes, selfish? Like,
yeah.
That, I was like, oh, Kate, you should not have said that.
Sure. I think the reason that she did say it was less emotional and more that she was trying to play into the viewpoints of other faithfuls.
But it was that so
all
weird.
In that all the murders had been vindictive. But I think that she played into it too hard.
Well, and it's, but like, if she played it that way two roundtables ago, yes, I would agree that would have been a smart move. But here, like you said, everyone seemed to have reverence. And so, like, that's not the mood to play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it just kind of made you stick out like a sore thumb. And they're like, why selfish? Why, like, is it because she's working with you? Like,
yeah.
It's strange. MJ again writes, Phaedra, really tiny.
Phaedra.
It's so good. I love Phaedra saying, so I'm for girl power, so I voted for you, CT, because she's and CT goes, sexist, like joking. And then they get to CT's vote, and he goes, I voted for you, Phaedra. I think you came on here to be the opposite of who you are in real life. And I think you've been the best traitor we've seen yet. And the puppy dog, the puppy dog eyes that CT gives Phaedra is like, I melted into the couch.
That man.
Like, that is why people find him so attractive.
Yes.
Like, that is
that shit right there. He is the himbo of the himbos, like smart and funny and kind and easy on the eyes. Like, that's men.
That's more of that.
That is what you want to emulate.
Phaedra is eliminated. She stands up in front of everybody. And I love that she goes, I'm the most fabulous, faithful. And everyone goes, what? And she goes, traitor. And walks off. I love that. Yeah. Again, we'll just say overall, Phaedra, the star of the season.
Yeah. Completely.
Undoubtedly, whether she always knew what she was doing, she made some amazing moments and big moves and was so vital to the season being so good.
Yeah. I am interested to see how entertaining this last episode is going to be without her.
Right.
But I think a lot of the attention is going to be on how Kate can dodge any suspicion.
For sure. So, they get back into the castle and all that stuff. Sandra immediately goes up to Kate and goes, Kate, I want to ask you about that selfish part that you said to Phaedra. What was that about, basically? And Kate goes, because I had started to hear from y'all, all the murders she's done. And once I realized the pattern, I was like, this is gross. I thought this was a weird choice to make. Because I thought she should have just been honest with, it's sort of honesty with a twist. And I think she should have just been look, you guys know I was advocating to not take out Phaedra this round. I was going around putting a target on my back, advocating for Phaedra because I genuinely believe that she was a faithful.
Yeah.
Right? And now she gives up and now I have the egg on my face. If she would have leaned more into that, I think that would have been much smarter.
Possibly. Do you remember if Sandra says something about this or not?
She basically says it's a red flag to her.
No. To anyone else.
No, that's how we end the episode. We end the episode with this conversation and Sandra in her confessional basically saying maybe it could be Kate. This seems very odd.
If Kate gets a murder tonight, which I think she does,
she's probably going to murder Sandra.
Bye.
Yeah, probably.
That's the choice, right? It's the one person who has maybe gotten a ear in her direction.
Yeah.
And if Sandra doesn't say anything to anyone else, then it never gets out.
But then who do you, because they're going to do one full round table, I think, one full round table banishment, right? Who do you put the target on then? CT?
Maybe.
That's the CT or Trishel, but
you can't put it on Trishel.
Yeah.
I think Trishel has unfortunately overproven herself to be faithful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think CT, there's an argument to be made. I think MJ is underrated as a
maybe.
You could, because she has actively been sneaking around, listening in on conversations, and pretty much everyone knows that she's been doing that.
Yeah, that's fair.
There's an argument to be made for MJ. And there's an argument, I think if you make an argument for CT, you could also technically make an argument for Sheree, but I think it's weak. I think it's really weak. I don't think there's an argument for Trishel. And I think Sandra is the only one who has anything that could give you an argument for Kate.
Right. Yeah. I think maybe it is a good idea to kill Sandra at the end of the day. Even though I would not like that because I feel like Sandra...
No, because she's great. I love her.
Even though... Because Sandra not being in that final is weird to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was the Traitors. Like I said, finale is coming out after we finish recording this podcast. We'll be talking about it next week. And it'll be exciting to see who turns out on top. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And then when we come back, we're talking the newest episode of Married to Medicine. Don't go anywhere.
Well, hello, friends. I'm your pal in the mainstream media.
And I'm the Riz.
Riz, it takes years of strenuous, dedicated training before you're worthy to step inside a professional wrestling ring. But it takes even more time to develop complex, highly astute opinions about professional wrestling. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes. And you know where we can find that?
Yes.
On the Wrestling Mayhem.
That's right.
I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin.
And if you're anything like us, you live your life out loud.
And when it comes to issues of discrimination, inequity, and outright bigotry, we use every platform we have to speak out against systems of oppression that perpetrate violence against marginalized groups.
That's why we are so proud to wear designs from the Survivors Know merch store. Their team has created designs that feature unapologetic, empowering, and survivor-centered messaging that range from mild,
like accountability is love and toxicity is not on the menu,
to a little more spicy,
like one of my favorites, fuck your laws, fuck your system, transformative justice now, which has a cute little happy flower on it.
Each design is available on a variety of items, from t-shirts and hoodies to bags, blankets, magnets, and even stickers. And as more items become available, the options will continue to grow.
100% of the proceeds go back into supporting the amazing work done at Survivors Know to support survivors, workers, and survivor advocates by organizing, challenging the status quo, and creating alternatives to the systems that fail us.
Support Survivors Know by shopping today at survivorsknow.threadless.com.
That's survivorsknow.threadless.com.
Sidekick Media Services. We are your sidekick in business for social media, video production, and more. Find out more at sidekickmediaservices.com.
Welcome back to A Gay and His Envy. Let's head down to Atlanta, where Quad returns to find herself on the defense from allegations and accusations and struggling to find a path forward with her former friends and perhaps her former co-stars on Married to Medicine.
Married to Medicine, part one of the reunion. I really enjoyed this first part in terms of like I said, I've seen some people be kind of down on this season that it wasn't the most exciting. I don't agree just because I love this cast more than anything, but this, like, really, they were bringing it this reunion. I will say, though, Quad is they're coming for Quad.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I agree with, sometimes I don't. It's a little,
yeah.
I do think there is more of a gray area to everything that's happening right now,
right,
with the Quad stuff.
Well, and I think, like, this cast, unlike most of the Housewives casts, this cast feels real.
Sure, I agree with that.
And they, like I said, they have saved marriages in the past at reunions. Magic happens at these reunions. So I think, and it feels like in this first episode that there is maybe a glimmer of hope for Quad.
You were saying that. Like, you kind of, I feel like people are, I feel like not everyone thinks that way in terms of this reunion.
Yeah.
But I see what you, like, we'll get into it more, but I saw what you meant, because it definitely felt, there felt to be a genuineness, and I do think there was moments where, in her Quad way, don't get me wrong,
right,
but like where Quad was trying to make some inroads.
Right.
And I think that was important.
Oh, and I think she repaired some of the issue between her and Jackie. I think she is.
Well, we'll see,
right,
for sure.
I feel like she's, you know what I mean? Like, she is actively trying here,
mm-hmm,
in a way that I haven't seen her try in a while, because I feel like since the whole sister circle thing, she's kind of been checked out.
Yeah.
And I think that's been like, what, 3 seasons?
I think she was really particularly checked out last season.
But I also think that a lot of that was coping with, you know, being single again, with, you know, finding herself now raising a nephew,
mm-hmm,
you know, like, nephew, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, she's, you know, all of these changes in her life are hitting all at the same time. And that's a lot to deal with and try to film a fucking show.
Right.
So, yeah, I feel like that's what was happening. We didn't see any of her nephew this season, did we?
No, we didn't. Well, we didn't get much of her this season at all. But
her at home, we didn't really get.
Yeah. And I think, like,
she was filmed like a friend of.
Essentially. And I think the only worry I have is, like, and we'll get into it with, like, Jackie and with, like, Simone, like, stuff that was and was not shown this part of the reunion. Maybe it'll get touched on later. Who knows? But it's like, I think Quad made it pretty clear in the interview with Carlos King that one of the real hangups for her is some of their reaction to the Greg stuff, right? And the sort of,
yeah,
like, you know, the domestic violence stuff and all of that. And I think I don't know if they're willing to broach that on Bravo. I don't know if that's a conversation that needs to happen off camera where they work that out.
I mean, they've talked about it at previous reunions. It came up.
Sure, but I think like it has to like it's harder with Greg back, right? You know, this with Sweet Tea and Greg coming into the fold, it just sort of reopens wounds in many regards, and it reinforces the idea of the friendship that Greg has with the rest of the group to where it makes it very difficult. And even Quad has said, like, I've moved on. I moved past my feelings. She said that in the finale, right?
Yeah.
When she had that moment with Greg. And it's like, but I don't think you have, though. And understandably, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't move past that.
No.
So...
But I will say, at least Heavenly, you know, don't fucking fuck with Greg.
Sure.
She has made that very clear.
She cleans his teeth and that's about it.
She may not even do that anymore. I don't know if I'd allow her in my mouth after that.
Well, in the way that her and Sweet Tea are going at it and like the that probably is not a thing. They come in for the reunion. Oh my God, they had all the framed before and after photos of like their first confessional look and like...
Wow.
And Quad's like, oh my God, they did me dirty back then.
Did they do her dirty or did she do herself dirty?
Sure. The makeup and wigs got better.
Definitely.
For
everybody.
Sweet Tea taking a page out of Heavenly's playbook and posting up all these motivational fucking...
At least she didn't draw mustaches on anybody.
Well, but she does post one that says frying pan free zone because of the whole... She's saying that Heavenly hit Damon with a frying pan or whatever, and posted a unflattering photo of Heavenly with Damon when Heavenly was larger, and it's like, wow,
yeah,
it's hard. That's one of those moments where it's like only on this show, only against Heavenly, because Heavenly is such a monster. Like, you know what I mean? Like Heavenly would do that shit too. So it's
Heavenly
like,
and Nabobly.
Yeah, basically. Andy intros the reunion. Andy makes a comment to Heavenly. So does Laura give you any advice to bridge the generational gap with Sweet Tea? And Heavenly goes, I mean, I think Laura's in the same age as Sweet Tea, you know, just about. And Andy goes, is Sweet Tea college age? And Heavenly goes, mentally. They're coming. Like, I actually think if they play this right, this could be the new feud of the century for Married to Medicine.
I'm here for it.
Because I think, we'll get to it. Sweet Tea kind of holds her own. I think Sweet Tea, I don't know when it happened, but I do think there's some shift where she kind of realized, oh, wait, I'm on reality television.
I think it, well, because this is happening after most of the season has aired. There's a lot of, like, public response. You can see how people are, like, their opinions of things. And that's really kind of when it hits,
mm-hmm.
right? We have seen that before with people's freshman season on Housewives and whatnot, where during the season they're kind of demure and then they'll perk up at the reunion. And if they don't perk up, they go home.
Right.
They don't come back.
You kind of auditioning.
Yeah. But Sweet Tea is... Oh, Sweet Tea turned sour.
Oh, for sure.
She's spoiled in the refrigerator.
Andy asked her about all the inspirational quotes backstage, and Sweet Tea goes, yeah, I just want to give Heavenly some words of affirmation. Heavenly goes, so are we getting Sweet Tea or Long Island iced tea? Which one are we getting? And Sweet Tea goes, I see we're getting malt liquor over here. I
was like, oh,
that was good. I was like, I was like, you go, girl. I was impressed, like, genuinely. Also, throughout this reunion, they do these moments where they do these throwback clips of, like, old fights and old, like, you know, moments or whatever. I guess they say it for, like, celebrating 10 years and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they've ever done this before on, like, Bravo reunions. What were your thoughts? I kind of felt like it was, like, filling time in a way.
Ish. I feel like maybe they had 2.5 episodes.
Right.
Uh-huh. And they were trying to throw some things in. It also was giving me like almost like a vibe of like court TV almost.
Yeah.
But also like 90s America's Funniest Home Videos, like with the Bob Saget.
Yeah.
And like, it was very throwback.
And it was odd.
The vibe was weird.
And it was odd because they would play that and be, and like, they would play like the Quad Lisa Nicole fight. And they'd be like, Quad, what do you think about that? She's like, yeah, that was crazy. I don't know what you want me to say. Like,
she's not here.
Yeah. Apparently her and Lisa Nicole are good now. She said during the reunion. So like, okay. I don't know. Like good in that regard, at least. They do a package for Phaedra and sort of like give her story from the season. Andy asked Toya about her saying that it was strange that Apollo wasn't at the birthday party. And Toya goes, look, I would think that at his son's birthday party, he would be present. But like, hey, like that's what she, you know, she does in her household. Phaedra, if you know, gives her like a death stare. I've never seen Phaedra be so like swallowing in anger.
Well, the thing that's funny is that we actually had our timeline wrong. At the beginning of the season, we thought that Phaedra was coming off of filming Traitors, but Phaedra filmed the Traitors in between the season and this reunion.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So she's coming off of the Traitors into this reunion.
Sure. I think that's part of it, but also I think like...
She's like, I just got banished in Scotland. You not fixing to come for me, bitch.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see when Apollo comes out on stage. It seems like Phaedra invited him, which, I mean, like, that is a good, like, sort of, like, hey, Toya, fuck you. Like, you want to see my man so bad, or my old man so bad.
You want to know? He was present. He was in the house. He just didn't want to be on reality television.
But if you want him to come out, he can come out.
Uh-huh.
Andy asked about Phaedra changing her flight to Napa to not be on with Quad. Phaedra goes, look, I had a conversation with Toya, and she said that me and Quad don't see eye to eye. It was Toya's event, and I felt like Quad wouldn't even want to go anyways. Phaedra's trying to, like, she said something about, like, her, like, she was at, like, a pharmacy or something at one point, and it's like, it really is, like, you could tell when Phaedra's just trying to find an excuse for something.
The truth ain't in the bitch.
Right. Quad calls it out and she goes, like, I felt like Phaedra was just going along to get along, and I felt like she turned her back on me. Simone goes, what's wrong with going along to get along with everybody instead of being booed up with just you? Simone was definitely, I feel nitpicking at Quad a little bit, right?
Because sure, but Simone's always been very critical of everyone else. That's yes. Just how she's always been. Everyone deserves the nitpick.
Right. We'll get to it. I was a little frustrated with Simone this episode. Like, and I say that I'm a big Simone fan.
Yeah.
But like, I felt some of her arguments to be slightly frustrating. And I feel like she more than anyone is over Quad and does not want
yeah.
a friendship.
Yeah.
And so
1,000%.
And so that can be frustrating.
In fact, I feel like she's surpassed Toya in her being over Quad,
seemingly,
which is weird because Toya's been the biggest has the biggest middle finger for Quad.
Not to say that Toya doesn't enjoy it when Quad gets dragged this reunion. The amount of times they cut to Toya just enjoying her ass when like
yeah.
Quad says that once Phaedra found out that the ladies had issues with her, that she wanted nothing to do with her. Basically, Phaedra just goes, because Annie's like, why ditch her? And Phaedra goes, it's not a matter of ditching her. It's a matter of, why would I attach myself to the Titanic? And Heavily goes, God dang. It's like really just calling her out like that. I mean, I wonder how different the season would have been if Phaedra did stayed aligned to Quad.
Yeah.
I do think once Phaedra flipped, there was no one to advocate for Quad, and therefore
the problem is Quad was her in.
Yeah,
to the show
in a way,
and so she was like, I don't have solid ground on which to hold her up. I can't, like, I'm just finding my footing. How am I supposed to help her get back on this show?
Right,
like, of course not. She's like, I don't want to sit here and play in the band. They said women and children get off this boat first. I'm a woman. I'm gonna get off this boat. Bye.
Yeah, exactly. Andy asks Heavenly about like what she claims that Quad said about Phaedra, the stuff that she brought up at the table in Napa Valley. And Heavenly, she's like, I mean, she says she lies all the time, that, you know, she dated Dr. G, all this stuff. Quad goes, I didn't say that she lies all the time, but the fact that she said that she didn't date Dr. G and then she told me, that is a lie. And Andy cuts to Jason and goes, Heavenly, you did say the truth ain't in the bitch. So
I did find it strange, not that I don't trust Quad, But I don't trust G. Why does she trust G?
Well, yes.
Why does Quad trust anything that has ever come out of his mouth?
Because Andy later says, like, how'd you find out about them dating? And she's like, Greg told me. And it's like, again, I wouldn't fully trust Greg. I don't know what his motive to say that is necessarily. And I don't know if I fully believe Phaedra in terms of that.
I believe they probably went on one date. He thought it was more serious than she did. And when she called it off, he decided to be vindictive in his description of it.
Sure. Heavenly says, look, when I met Phaedra, she told me that she never dated Greg. And then she said, well, maybe I did date him. And then Phaedra goes, you were saying date. When black folks talk about date, they mean some carrying on. There was no carrying on. I never kissed him, never really held his hand. And Sweet Tea goes, he did say y'all kissed, though. Phaedra goes, I have never kissed that man. And Sweet Tea goes, I don't think Gregory is a reason to lie, though. Like, I do agree where it's like, why would, like...
No.
I agree in that you, well...
I think he has reason to lie.
Maybe not broadly, but why would he tell Sweet Tea that? You know what I mean?
Because it...
Like, why would you tell your new partner about this person in your friend group and be like, yeah, we made out and we...
Because you don't want her to like her.
But it doesn't seem, but Greg has spent so much this season, like, being like, y'all have to love each other. You have to, like, you know, everyone's cool. Everyone's nice to each other.
Right. But the thing is that happened after that, right? At the beginning of this season, it was Quad is hanging on by a thread and her only friend is Phaedra. Fuck both of them.
Right.
Because I want to be back on this show with Sweet Tea. So what I'm going to do is pit my new wife against my old wife and her friend.
Right.
And also there's an element of male chauvinist bullshit of she's a conquest. Of course I'm going to claim her. She's a notch in my belt.
I guess. That's not outside the realm of Greg's thinking, but...
You know, like, that's how I see it.
Sure. Quad says, look, I didn't say that they were intimate, but then Quad then brings up the whole... that it started fine enough, but then Phaedra asked for $4,000 a month or whatever, and then Greg basically said no. Quad says, and he basically, you know, rejected you and said that that wasn't his ministry. And then she goes, well, in your green screen that you said, what am I going to do with $4,000? If you get $4,000 a month for 3 months, then you get your $10,000 back with $2,000 left over. And I was like, okay, mathematical equation, Quad.
My question is, when did this happen? Because Phaedra and Apollo had been together for a really fucking long time.
Right. I mean, it had to be in the transition period.
He was already married to Quad at that point.
Oh, that's right. She does say it was before Quad.
So it would have been before her and Apollo broke up?
Maybe.
Because weren't they, like, together in high school or
maybe
something?
Maybe before they were together.
No, her and Apollo have known each other since high school.
When did Married to Medicine start?
10 years ago.
10 years ago. So, and we're in season what? 16 of Atlanta? So, yeah, that timeline seems weird. I don't know. If anyone can, maybe right before Apollo. I don't know.
Like, it would have had to been, like, a sliver of time after Apollo, before Quad. And I don't know that sliver of time exists.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure all of that overlaps. So, who cheated on who?
Well,
that's my question.
Well, I mean, Phaedra's not saying that he had no relationship, no, so to speak.
I think they were in the talking phase.
Right.
They went out on a date. A date does not mean we were dating. It just, that's the end of the talking phase.
Sure.
And they decided it went no longer than the one date. That's what I think happened.
Phaedra then goes, if I did ask that man for $4,000, he obviously didn't have it. And y'all both married the man.
Exactly.
This is a great read. Heavenly goes, well, Sweet Tea thinks that her man tells her everything, and it's obviously stuff you don't know. And Sweet Tea goes, do not speak on my marriage, and starts to get into it with Heavenly over that.
Oh, Lord.
Which, yeah, you're right, though, that Heavenly, like, doesn't fuck with Dr. Greg at all.
No.
Andy asks Quad, Andy asks Quad who told her about the 4,000. She's like, Gregory did. And
again, why are we trusting this hoe?
Yeah. But then Phaedra goes, that's so weird. It's such an arbitrary number.
But then that made me go,
right. I'm like, Quad, like, Phaedra doesn't like
4,000. Like, why are you, what?
It doesn't, she's not a, you know, beam of honesty in his face.
No, no.
Andy's like asking questions for them to like raise their hand on. He asked about whether Phaedra dressed heavenly for Damon's event or whatever with that sparkly like thing with the boobs out. And Simone thinks so. She says, guilty as charged. Heavenly goes, look, I'll do you, Simone. And Simone goes, look, I'm 120 pounds. And everyone's like, oh shit. Like calling Heavenly fat.
That's not necessary.
Heavenly, it's not, but Heavenly takes in charge. He goes, look, but I still have sex with my man every night. So he must lack this ass. And Simone goes, all right, he's got plenty of it. Hopefully he likes it. And Heavenly goes, he got to go through some stuff, but he get to it. Like it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, don't fat shame, but also like like when Heavenly like takes it in stride enough.
Yeah.
Heavenly's one of the people being like, yeah, I'm fucking fat. Like, you know,
I'm more cushion for the pushing, baby.
Sure. Annie asks if Quad and Phaedra can move on, and Phaedra's like, look, Quad, like I want friends where I don't want to feel like if you think I'm not rocking with you that you're gonna talk about me. And Quad goes, I didn't drag you, sweetheart. Simone turns to Heavenly and goes, Heavenly, did she drag her? And Heavenly goes, yes, she dragged her. No, she definitely dragged her.
Yeah.
So I was like, thank you. Phaedra is like, look, I told her that I wasn't happy with the funeral. And then she called Heavenly, you know, to tell her about me or whatever. Quad goes, Heavenly already knew what you had said. You kept saying this was a bunch of ninja mess.
Yeah, we know what she meant.
Right.
Moving on.
Heavenly said, I didn't know that until you called me. And you always know I don't like the ninja term. Like, what? Uh-huh. I guess that's a big sticking point for her. But then she's like,
There's a lot of people in the black community that do not like the reclaiming of that word.
I also just love that Heavenly will say any other word in the dictionary, but not that.
Right. She will call anybody anything but a child of God and that word.
Right. And Heavenly was upset about what Quad said about Phaedra. What Phaedra was saying, she's like, fuck her, blah, blah, blah. And like Quad's more specific. She goes, she said that, well, if Phaedra doesn't like how we do things over here, then Phaedra can get the hell on.
What?
Which.
Yeah.
I understand that in the moment because it's like, this is our show.
You're coming in here. So you can abide by the rules or you can get the fuck out.
And the, like, I mean, allegedly what happened at the funeral was much more like intense than what was even shown on television. So that aside, but based off of what we were shown, it's like that didn't seem outside the realm of Mary to Madison. Was it the best choice for Quad? No.
Well, I mean, and Toya hints to the fact that it almost came to blows between her and Quad.
Yeah, it got like very close to that. So speaking of Toya, we didn't get Toya's package. Andy asks Simone, does she still need to appreciate Eugene more? And Simone goes, my friend needs to allow him to plan something and put no criticism behind it. And Toya goes, I don't think that's realistic. I'm like, well, it better be.
It's really not that difficult to just go, you know what? I'm not going to criticize this.
She goes, I do think in our relationship, you know, that's necessary. You know, that's not necessary. She goes on this longer thing about like, it's always been like the thing with me and Eugene that I'm very like particular in terms of things. And that's how it's worked for us or whatever. And Toya talks like further because Andy asked about like, you know, what kind of got you this like high level taste or whatever that is, you know, seems to be a part of your life. And she talks about growing up poor. She talks about that when her mother moved them to the suburbs that she had Pro Wings, which I guess are like sort of like
it's a Payless brand,
like a cheaper sneaker. And like
it's the Payless version of, I want to say Converse.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
one of the nicer ones.
It may be like the Payless version of like Air Forces. I can't remember. It's one of the bigger name brand shoes from back in the day.
Yeah, but then she got basically teased for it, and so like that was her like knew in that moment that she wanted to raise her expectations, which I think makes it's not bad to have like high expectations. I just think like Toya, it's not like Eugene is giving you like Pro Wings and then you're demanding like Air Force Ones.
Right.
He's giving you like, you know, Jordans and like your, but it's like, but not those Jordans, these Jordans.
Right. Right. So I love how in this package, she basically called herself bougie. It's like, well, I didn't come up this way. I'm just fake as fuck.
Sure. But I mean,
like, okay.
We could have told you that, Toya.
I could have told you that. Season one.
Andy asked about the whole Met Gala controversy about the wine. This is where Toya lost me. I am fully with the other girls at this point. Because what the fuck? Andy goes, did you buy the wine or was it provided to you? And Toya goes, absolutely. That is the question. And Andy's like, That's why. Yeah, I asked
and
him.
The answer is
what? Toya goes, they say, hey, Toya, you're allowed. She details this whole like contract with like the Kendall Jackson or whatever. She's like, hey, Toya, you're only allowed so many bottles per year. And Andy goes, so it was given to you. And Toya goes, it was given, but it's not really free, Andy. If they give me 10 cases, I have to throw parties to give recognition to my business. And I'm taking away from that. So it's a generous donation. No, you made it seem like you paid $1,000
right.
or $1,400 or whatever to ship wine for this particular fucking event.
Right. My argument where this still makes sense, but she didn't actually make this argument, so it makes me question it, is, okay, well, if you have to have a certain amount of events per year, and this is the wine that you use for those events, if you're using this wine for that, for the Met Gala instead, then you have to pay later out of pocket to do the events that you need to do, which...
But I don't think that's what she's saying. I don't think she's saying, like, you have to do 10 events. It's like, here's 10 cases, do events...
Right.
To promote them, this is what these are for. And the Met Gala counts as one of those events. Because Andy goes, I mean, it actually seems like a smart business strategy to show it on this huge television show for this event. Like, this is like, the wine is for the purpose of what it's designated for.
Yeah, but I don't know that it gave more exposure than the Napa trip.
Sure, but that's also relative. That's my other issue. It's like... Toya was acting, and Eugene also, was acting as like there was like a specific monetary value that they were then assigning as the offset for the $1,000. And it's like, but that can, this is like all subjective.
But I also feel like when they were talking about it before, it seemed like they still had to pay something to get those cases, but it was like less than the market value. Like they paid like a lesser rate
maybe,
for these cases.
Maybe. It doesn't, like, if it's just simply like you had these on standby, like, I think that they are right to be like, what the fuck? Like, this isn't like, you're not going out of your way to like.
Right.
Andy goes, and he asked Heavenly, why put Toya on blast at the event? Did you handle it well? And Heavenly goes, probably not, but I don't handle a lot of things well. And then Andy's like, well, that's like saying, like, I punched her, but, like, it's because I'm a bully. And Heavenly goes, that's right. No, you see, like, that's how it works, Andy. Like, I...
I am awful, and I did awful things. I don't know why you're surprised.
Honestly, like, I'd rather Tom Sandoval do this.
Honestly, yes. Embrace the villain.
Like, Heavenly's just like, yeah, but that's me. That's my nature.
Yeah.
We get a package then about sort of all, like, the medical stuff and, like, Jackie and Simone and their work and all the stuff they did this season. Andy asked Jackie about speaking with Vice President Harris and then asked, Heavenly, are you still waiting for your invite to the White House? And then Heavenly goes, actually, Kamala invited Jackie to the HBCU game and Jackie didn't go. So I was like, where's my ticket?
Well, and the thing that was really funny about this is Heavenly at first says, well, she had actually invited her to the Super Bowl. And then we were like, what? And then she was like, well, no, it was her HBCU. It wasn't like... a Super Bowl. Like,
can you imagine that, like, you as like the vice president's campaign designate tickets for Dr. Jackie and then Heavenly shows up? Like, that is a nightmare waiting to happen. They talk about like Ozempic use or whatever.
Yeah.
Heavenly admits that she has tried it, but that she didn't. She was like, once I heard the stuff about like you gain it all back at a certain point, like decided not to. Jackie's like, okay, but we have to remember though, we forget that we do, when you do it, you also need to change your lifestyle. Kind of like what Emily on OC was saying about like it was a jump start to then,
right,
you know, do all that. And Andy goes, did you change your lifestyle, Heavenly? And Heavenly goes, no, Andy. I'm not doing that. Okay. So Andy then brings up Jackie's resurfaced comments from Heavenly's YouTube show. The stuff basically about how, like basically contradicting much of what she was saying about sort of,
right,
the issues with like black maternal mortality. And like,
she said something to the effect of, black women tend to overplay and be over dramatic. And so then they're not believed because it's, the boy that cried wolf. And I was like, well, that's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, like, I would say that black people in general underplay things because to overplay things puts them in a place of danger, typically. So, like, if a black person is pushed to that point to overplay something, it's really fucking bad and you need to pay attention. Exactly. Because they're putting themselves in physical danger to try to express how bad this is.
Right. Immediately when Andy brings it up, Jackie tears up and goes, "That was probably one of the hardest places I had to sit in medicine, because to see those words tear down everything that I did to promote the well-being of black women was really hard." I saw a lot of people, and I agree, kind of rightfully frustrated with this segment on the reunion, because they kind of made it more about what it did to Jackie and not about the comments.
Yep.
It was, there wasn't really sort of like, what did you mean by that? Do you understand the effect that has, et cetera, et cetera? It's just like, were the ladies there for you?
It's also weird for Andy to field those questions.
I guess.
I wish that part of the problem on this show is there is like this over loyalty to each other, except Quad. So they won't push. Each other on these questions.
Yeah.
So, because I really feel like only person who it would have been appropriate is Simone.
Well,
Simone should have taken it to her.
But Simone also kind of at one point refers to it as like, "I went to see what the hoopla was," and I was like, "Ooh, I don't like that you said that."
Yeah.
And did you also feel like, just face by facial expressions, did you also feel like Sweet Tea wanted to say something?
Probably.
As somebody who's going through endometriosis and like is having to deal with that. I think she even spoke about like having a doctor downplaying her pain in the past.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of felt like she wanted to say something in that moment.
I feel like she probably did, but she was like, you know, I don't need to like attack this woman anymore.
Because I'm going
to
get jumped by like 5 people.
Yeah.
Andy asked Phaedra why she was one of the first ones to defend Jackie. She goes, "Because I know what it feels like to be canceled. It only takes 30 seconds to hear something and throw darts, but it takes years to become the type of physician Jackie has become. So judgment should not be based on one misstep." I understand parts of this.
I understand that too. And I understand that Phaedra's like relating it to what happened to her on Atlanta. But that's a major fucking misstep.
Yeah, it's like
accusing Candy of sexual assault and drugging someone is a huge fucking misstep.
Yeah, it's not just simply like I said the wrong term. Like, I just don't. I feel like anytime someone says the word canceled, I'm just like, oh my god. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean. I do agree that like a moment does not speak to a person, and I think that is a valid thing to like talk about.
But then there's also the pattern that was reported by a huge, huge wave of black women in Atlanta who have come forward to say, she does not treat us the way that she has been shown to treat her celebrity clientele on the show.
Yeah, and
this is not the same service we get.
And Jackie sort of they don't really bring that element of it up at all. Jackie makes a comment like, "I invest in my patients, et cetera, et cetera," which it's kind of talking about that, but they didn't really get, like I said, they didn't really get into specifics.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a mistake. I think, like, and again, like, to jump to what Phaedra says before even indulging in like the merits of what the argument is just makes it feel cheap.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I wish Simone had kind of taken the reins here, because I feel like as the only other OBG on the cast, as a fellow black woman.
Yeah.
Like,
but I think she's so close to Jackie. And like,
but I feel like if anyone was able to do this sort of pushback with love, that's Simone.
Right.
And I feel like she would have been able to start this out with something along the lines of, "Okay, Jackie, I know me and you were good. So this is coming from love."
Sure.
"But these people watching us today deserve a better explanation."
Yeah. It's just,
you have to know how damaging those words are. You have to know that all of these patients out here have come forward and have been disappointed with the service they've gotten from you.
Right.
And you have to know how painful it is for us to sit here and hear those words coming out of your mouth when you were supposed to be leading this movement.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like she could have taken it to her in a way that was challenged with love.
Sure.
If anyone on this cast can do that sort of thing, it's Simone.
Right.
I think Jackie can also do that, but it's not. Right. She can't
I think she's capable of it. Don't get me wrong. I just don't think that's her mentality right now.
And I don't think it would have been Andy's place as a white man to do that on this platform.
I guess, but yeah. So Jackie talks about how the lady supported, her, you know, in ways that she can't explain. She like goes through down the line and Andy goes, and Quad, and Jackie goes, I did not hear from Quad, but I understood that I did not hear from her prior. And Jackie or Quad jumps in and goes, first and foremost, I think Jackie's an amazing doctor. I could empathize with Jackie because I had a massive group of people come against me. And I was like,
oh, here we go.
Where are we going with this, Quad? I was going through my own thing as well. Toya looks at her so disgustedly as she says that, by the way. They're very much team, like they're rallying behind. I think that's the like what you were saying. They're so tight as a group that it's like,
yeah.
You know, that's also the issue. And he goes, so the accusation against you all season is that they don't feel that you show up for them as a friend. And Quad goes, I mean, I did text over Christmas, and I did text, you know, on a group chat. I told Jackie, I'm praying for you, and keep your head up. And I do stand with Jackie, and Andy just goes, quietly. Andy, I was like, okay, Andy, why? Andy leading the whole, like, oh, well, you're not speaking up for Jackie. It felt like him being like, it's like, why is it about this? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Why has this pivoted back to shitting on Quad?
Yeah.
And I think maybe... I'm realizing now in this moment that it could possibly be punishment for not showing back up to filming to, you know, like.
But did they kick her off? I mean, I feel like they kicked her off. Like, what was she going to do to show up? Like, if no one was going to film with her?
Well, she didn't start the season until like 4 episodes late.
Oh, well, okay. That part. Yeah. I was going to say more the Carlos King interview.
Well, was that before this or after this?
It was before the reunion.
Oh, okay.
But I think, like, I mean, but also I don't know what that is because, like, Kenya's, like you said, has done it. Like, I think Eugene and Cecil were just on his podcast, actually, so, like...
Yeah. So, I mean, but, you know, Andy doesn't like when people go outside of the Bravo sphere to talk about Bravo.
Yeah. And especially right now, they need to keep it tight within the family.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get a package about Quad stuff. Quad immediately comes back from the package and goes, that was very hard to watch, and grabs a tissue to tear up. She goes, I'm not perfect. I've done things to hurt a lot of these women. Toya, you know, being one of them. And then she brings up, like, Anila had said this stuff about you sleeping around the neighborhood. She really throws Anila under the bus, which, like, I also am confused as to why Anila and Toya are seemingly friends now. Like, at least that we saw in the finale. Because Anila did play a part in that, right?
Yeah.
She goes... Quad goes, although those things didn't derive from me, I could have not repeated it. And for that, Toya, I want to apologize to you. I'm like, okay. She goes, I think now this is probably the third time. I'm like, shouldn't have added that part.
Yeah.
Like, she like does good and then like does something to like ruin it. She goes, but I wanted you to hear me so that this doesn't fall on deaf ears. It was wrong for me to do that. I didn't like what Simone said about me sleeping with the contractor, and I turned it around and did the exact same thing, and I was dead ass wrong.
I am glad that Quad named Simone as the originator of that rumor about the contractor, because a lot of people forget that Simone started that shit.
She at the very least brought it up on camera first.
Yes.
And so that's, yeah. But again, it's just like, don't, like... Quad also gets accused of, like, never apologizing without making it about her. Like, that was her big thing this season. And so, like, this didn't really help.
This didn't fully turn back to make it around her, but it did kind of slant that direction. You're like, oh, where you going? Get back on track.
And he goes, so what is the issue, though, in terms of the fissure? Like, is it that they don't accept your apology and move on, like, with others? And Toya interrupts and goes, Andy, she has never apologized like she just did. Like,
I love how Toya was like, all the other ones were bad. This one was good. But that one was, those were all bad. That's why.
And Quad starts to fight her, and Toya goes, like, I'm complimenting you and accepting your apology.
She's not, but okay. I mean, she is accepting the apology, but... She's not complimenting her.
Yeah. She's like, it's the first time you've led with you saying that you did something wrong. Toya then goes, I think her apology is convenient now, and I appreciate it. And I'm going to see going forward how she acts, because it's not the first time. And I'm like, that was such a roller coaster. It was like,
it really was.
It's convenient, but I accept it. But also,
it was fuck you. Wait, I'm complimenting you. I'm accepting it, but also fuck you. But
that's where I was so like, I think that's where our status of like maybe Quad can get back in,
yeah,
because it was so like confusing.
But that's also Toya.
Sure.
Toya is a little all over the place.
Quad then goes, look, other people's apologies are accepted quickly. And Toya goes, because you lie. When you came to Napa, you sat there and said, Toya, I'm here for you. But before that, when we sat on the couch, me, you, Simone, and Letitia, you said, I'm not here for you. I'm here for the check. And Sweet Tea says it in unison with her. So it's like, no, yeah, we were there for that conversation. Which the fact that Toya is saying that, it's like, yeah, that Quad, that is a problem. If you like actively said to them, I'm just doing this for the check.
Yeah.
That does influence how they then reacted in Napa.
But I mean, also, like, of course she's doing this season for the check.
That's the truth.
Because Bravo screwed her over by bringing Greg back on this show.
Sure.
Like, and they did her dirty because they didn't even tell her about it. Like, they just waited, and then she found out after the fact, and she's like, I'm not filming with that abusive piece of shit. Like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
You're not going to make me do that.
Quad goes, because I didn't think you want me there. Because you don't like my ass. And Toya goes, well, then maybe you should have called me and asked me. I told the other ladies to invite her. Which you
technically.
You technically did, but also it was obvious to anyone with the plane's eye that you did not want Quad there.
It was very obvious to anyone who knows anything about Bravo and cash trips, to where it was like, well, we have to invite Quad on this cash trip because she technically has a contract.
If I'm not positive, I think you also started the conversation with, but it's a business trip for me and I don't want Quad there to, like, you know what I mean, cause drama with my business. Like,
right. It almost seems, in retrospect, like she invited her on the trip just to send her home.
It very much looks that way.
It's like, girl.
Yeah. Amy asked Jackie, like, what did you want to hear during the resurrection? And she's just like, I just want to hear from Quad that she messed up and that, you know, for also not reaching out to them or whatever. Quad goes, I wanted to call you when all that stuff happened on social about the video. Mm-hmm. And I spoke with Heavenly and she said, right now is not a good time. And Simone goes, but why would you be needing Heavenly's permission? They catch Simone on something later with Toya that kind of contradicts this in a way.
But I didn't even agree with Simone in the first place. Quad, I think, follows it up immediately with, we know, everyone here knows that Jackie and Heavenly are like this with, yeah, their fingers crossed. Like, of course I'm going to call her and check the temperature.
Right.
But even then, I didn't call her. She called me.
Heavenly goes, I called Quad and said, do you have anything to do with this bullshit? Because this is not acceptable. And she says that she didn't. Honestly, when this stuff came together, a lot of us were thinking maybe Quad had her hands in it. And Quad was like, and then I said, like, is that what the girls are thinking? That, like, I'm the one that, like, disseminated the video or whatever?
Yeah.
Which out of the realm of possibility.
It's not out of the realm, but I would wonder at that point why she would target Jackie of everyone on this cast.
Because of everyone, Jackie, I would say, was the least attacking towards Quad.
Right. Jackie was the most open to fixing things.
Right. It's a conspiracy theory on my part. Don't get me wrong. I always thought it was Mariah.
But see,
with only how quick Mariah was to respond, of the, like, it just validates everything I said about Jackie and that she's protected and, you know, she portrays herself one way, but she's not, there's a real Jackie.
But then why would Mariah wait like 4 years to do this?
I don't know. Maybe with the whole vice president stuff. Like, it was timed in that regard. You know what I mean?
That triggers, but, like, I don't know. I don't know.
Honestly, but again, it's not about who sent it out. It's about that Jackie sent it.
Yeah, right. Whatever.
Andy asked Quad what she thought about going to Sweet T's Bachelorette and whether it was the right time to come back into the group. The obvious answer is no. But like,
yeah.
She goes like, look, I heard the ladies were asking about me. Toya brought me up as much as she could. She brought up that I got a citation and got arrested for DUI. I mean, also, you were negotiating your contract. Like, that's
right
in terms of specific timing. But also, like, it made for a moment. And yeah, it's not, again, it's not without the realm of possibility on these shows.
Honestly, even this show, like, specifically, is where I would expect this to happen.
Right. Annie then asked Phaedra if the lady should have reached out to Quad. And Phaedra goes, look, I told them, like, phones work both ways. And they replied that, you know, we're calling her, but she hasn't returned our calls. And Quad goes, Andy, I got to be honest. Nobody called me. And Simone goes, Quad, you got to keep it above, baby. And Simone gets pissed at this point and starts going off. She goes, if you have something happen, I call. I reach out. I show up. And you can't tell me one time that you sent a call or a text to show up in my life. I can name about three for you. Name one. One without a camera or a microphone. And I think, like, I understand people being – I see a lot of people being like – I mean, like, Quad to help find your – tried to help find your father when he was missing and you guys were going around trying
right.
to, you know, there were moments and I get that there was, yes, there is a camera there and yes, like, but I actually genuinely, I believe, call me naive. I think that's a moment that's beyond television, even though it's televised.
Yeah. Well, and that's one thing about Married to Medicine as opposed to Housewives. I believe that these bitches show up for each other. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily believe that about any of the other Housewives franchises, mm-hmm. but I believe that about these girls. I believe that whether there was a camera there or not, Quad would have showed up to look for her dad.
Yeah.
I believe that, you know, this video thing happened. These women rallied around Jackie, right? Quad wasn't there, but she was on the outs with everybody, so it makes sense why she wasn't there. So, but everybody else rallied around Jackie. Like, these women genuinely care about each other in a way that I don't believe any other Bravo cast does.
Yeah. I agree. And I was so frustrated with Simone at this point. So she's I have like three incidents I can bring up. And then she starts to talk about the thing. And we all know about the story, obviously, because it was in the news about Quad's niece who had drowned in Quad's pool when Quad wasn't home. And and she starts to very bring it up. And Quad is going, Simone, like, very clearly being like, I don't want to talk. Like, not go into detail. And Simone just keeps going into detail about it. And Simone, I don't care how, I don't care how angry you are at Quad. You needed to be like, you could make that point without.
Yeah.
You could have referred to it as an incident.
Because if she had said that, Bravo would have put the headline on the screen.
Yeah.
Like, nobody would have been unsure of what you were talking about.
Right.
So, and the thing is that I think Quad was less angry about that and more just, it's so fresh, I don't want to relive this.
Yeah, and it's still fair. I mean, like, it was only, like, months.
Yeah.
So, like, I just... Yeah,
and you know there's got to be like a fuck ton of guilt over that,
right?
Like, don't bring that up here.
Yeah, I was frustrated with Simone in that regard. But Quad's crying, obviously. Phaedra's comforting her. They kind of get back on track with it. Quad goes, telling Simone, we went out to dinner, and I said, I want to apologize to you for anything that I've done. She said, you've done nothing to me. She said, I just don't want Toya upset at me. And Simone goes, those are not my words. Heavenly then goes, I mean, that's what you told me. So it's Heavenly's being like, you didn't just say it to Quad.
Whoop.
And then that's where I'm like, that kind of contradicts what you're saying about, like, why did you need Heavenly's, like, you know, whatever. Simone goes, I'm not going to do anything that jeopardizes my friendship with this one. When I call her, she's there. She invites me to her home. Her husband cooks for me. She cooks for me. She has loved on me. And I was like,
and in this moment, I'm literally sitting in the living room cackling going, where is my pot roast?
Yeah.
Where is my brisket? I want my food, Quad.
She literally, you wouldn't get this because you don't watch Summer House, but I've seen the clip from Summer House. It was very much a, how many sandwiches have you made for me?
It was also very, I invited you into my home. I made you a beverage. Yeah.
Food's the connector.
Honestly.
Andy's getting frustrated with Simone. He goes, I want to hear from Quad. And then Simone just yells at him, if she stays honest, I stay quiet. If she lies, I'm talking. It's like, Jesus. Andy was saying at the film, like when he was like filming live in the reunion, that Simone literally was making him deaf in one ear at one point because of how much she was yelling.
I mean, that's just Simone. I mean, at this point, you would think that he would learn not to put her first chair.
I know, right? Like,
or go back to COVID spacing for her.
Just get some of those like earmuffs that you have on like shooting ranges.
Sit her in her own soundstage, like in the next building over.
Right.
So that, you know, no one is dead.
Quad says that Simone did reach out after the thing with her niece. And Quad goes, and I appreciate you showing up for me in that terrible time in my life. And I still struggle with it today. Like, there's sort of like a frustration. And Simone's also very dead, like, behind the eyes in terms of that. Like, there is a, like, that I think is going to be a tough.
Yeah,
relationship to repair. If there's any hope of that.
Quad can't come back on good terms with everybody.
I guess
you need gotta have a feud.
They break for lunch at this point, and everyone starts to kind of leave. But before the other side of the couch goes, Quad turns to Jackie and goes, "Jackie, you really think that I like did that? Like, she's like, I would never do that to you," and she's like pleading with Jackie with like tears in her eyes, being like, "I wouldn't do that. Like, I wouldn't do that to you. You know, and that hurts me that you would think that." And Jackie tells her, "We're not connected." When she said, "I wouldn't do that to you," we're not connected enough to know that. I don't know what happens in Quad's life. I think you're a wonderful person, but I'd rather lose a friend than to lose myself. And it's like, wow.
Jackie just has a way with words.
Yeah.
That just is the kindest dagger to the heart you've ever had. And it's like, I hate you. You just stabbed me in the heart. But also, I can't be mad for it.
But also, just her just basically telling Quad, I don't know that you wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's like, which is accurate, but a very harsh thing to say to someone.
Yeah. But like, like you said, accurate.
Right.
Like, it's, Jackie don't mince words.
Yeah. That was the first part of the Married to Medicine reunion. Like, really great stuff. I think it'll be interesting to see how it progresses. The husbands come out next week. Apollo comes out next week. So,
did he get a doctorate in prison? Is that where this is going?
Maybe. Who knows? But yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
All right. Let's get into these tops and bottoms. Let's talk about Drag Race. We got Traitors and we got Married to Medicine. What you thinking, babe?
I'll start with my top. I'm going to give it to Phaedra, specifically for Traitors and specifically for the season of Traitors.
Okay.
And I know it's not episode specific, but I just feel like this is like being the swan song of Phaedra on Traitors. I think just really an epic performance overall for a reality star. Like, there really was, more people should talk about like Phaedra's renaissance in the last like year or so. I really think like to take, you know, to go from a moment that was very not great for her and her time on Atlanta. And, you know, obviously we should never forget about it, but is really redeemed herself in many ways and just has found her niche. And like, it's just been really impressive to see her hold her own with everybody on the Traitors and these like big level personalities and game players. And yeah, just really fantastic stuff from her. My bottom is over on Married to Medicine, and I'm going to give it to Simone, which is terrible to say.
Yeah.
I am devoted to Simone. I love Simone, but like, I just think that like she's very hard on Quad this reunion, past the point of what I think was normal
or fair.
And I think that's frustrating. I think this is one of the moments where I think she doesn't really see the forest through the trees and focuses on what's important. And yeah, just, it didn't lead to a great performance by her this reunion. So that's what I will say. What about you, babe? What are your tops and bottoms?
I'm going to do my bottom first, and it's going to go to production at Drag Race. Look, I've already ranted enough on this episode about how bullshit I think the way that they stack things are. One point that I think we didn't mention is that next week is another musical challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they had to make sure to get rid of Plasma this week was because they knew she was going to fucking beat the shit out of this goddamn challenge.
Yeah.
So, and they couldn't have that. So they got rid of her this week because they had to. And I think that sort of production is just so, it's so dishonest. Like, I understand you're doing a reality TV show, so there's a level of production shenanigans, but you market yourself as a competition. Let people compete.
Mm-hmm.
Let people actually get what they have earned and what they have deserved, and let them go home when they bottom out. And I don't think that was her time yet. And it wasn't, I don't think, fair to the integrity of the competition element of the show to continually do this sort of overproducing of elimination order.
Right.
It's just, and it's just been getting more and more and more egregious as the years go by. My top for the week is going to be Safira.
Yeah.
Because she did this challenge twice. And bitch is not getting her flowers.
Sure.
I also had like a honorable mention for Morphine because bitch has been killing it and not getting any recognition either. So it's just, it's frustrating when you see queens that are performing very well, not getting their recognition. Mm-hmm. And then you see other people who are performing well, who are getting sent home. And then you see other people who were coasting through on one ability. Not that she hasn't kicked ass in the fucking lip syncs, but it's just not fair if that's the only element at the end of the day that keeps you on the show.
Right.
So we're giving flowers where they're deserved. Safira, Morphine, both of you are fucking phenomenal. But Safira did this challenge twice. This is the second time she's done a challenge twice this season, and not even been like, she didn't even win either time. One time she wasted her immunity potion on that challenge. So like, yeah, it's been a little frustrating. Stop sleeping on Mother. Hey, thanks for tuning into this episode of A Gay and His Envy.
Join us next time for more of our recaps and hot takes. And be sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you are listening. And check us out on our social media at A Gay and His Envy on all the platforms.
A special shout out to Shane Ivers, who wrote Pulsar, the song we use for our theme.
I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin. And we're out.
This show is a member of the Sorgatron Media Podcast Network. Find out more at sorgatronmedia.com.